Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake Gibb. You're in the net live.
This is Taiba Hanif Park, and you are in the net live.
Aloha, this is Mike Lambert, and you are in the net live.
Loy Ball, and you're on the net live.
Rhyme Along, and you're in the net live.
Hey, this is Heather Ballin, and you're live in the net. Nope, that was totally wrong.
Hey, this is Karch Kira, and you're in the net live with Willie and Barney.
Welcome, welcome. There really are so many more people here than just Willie and Barney. Willie's not even really here. I think he's still in the kitchen mixing a drink. Late night in Russia.
Still a sore subject.
Just how we treat you. We want to keep you hanging on for something. You got to have some reason to come back every Monday. That one Monday is going to be Ann Dieter.
I appreciate it.
Welcome, everyone, to the Net Live here on another Monday. It is the 24th of January 2011. We appreciate you being here. We've got another big show planned for you here on today's program. We've got Bill Ferguson of USC, the number one ranked Trojan men. He's going to join us.
I was waiting for you to hit the fight song.
Oh, yeah. I got to boot that up. He's going to be here to talk about his team and this season, the young men's season. And then Mark Swindell, the owner of University Athlete, also an assistant coach at Air Force. He's going to join us to talk about some of the problems they're having with the NCAA. And anytime I can throw the NCAA under the bus, by all means.
Coaches in a panic around the country.
It's not a good thing. It's not. The NCAA has designated University Athlete a recruiting service, and that has a lot of implications about how it's used or not used in the future.
And for those in the volleyball world, University Athlete is what every college coach uses as a recruiting tool to help them. It makes it so much easier. It's like they're put back in the dark ages.
Back to pen and paper.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I saw them at the MLK tournament. They're flipping through papers. It's just not good.
Basically, it's a Palm Pilot program that provided information on where athletes were, who they were, and at tournaments you could find them on courts and times. And now you have a folder and a gigantic set of papers just trying to figure out where kids are, what teams, yeah. Rosters. It's a mess. So a little dispute with the NCAA, and we'll have Mark on. He'll tell us more about it.
Are you going to Vegas? Yeah, I thought about that.
Oh, for the club tournament?
Yeah.
It's anyway, a couple
the
Net
weeks. Live should be in Vegas. Right, it's President's Day weekend. It's Rosenthal and I were talking about
it. I should go to Vegas? We should go to Vegas.
I'm already there. You have to remember that. Coaching.
That's true. Well, we got to get Roche to travel somehow. DJ Roche.
As long as he gets some night gigs, he's going to be just fine.
I will go to Vegas.
He will not be there for the morning show, but he will be in Vegas.
I'll be there in spirit.
Mandalay Bay. Got to hook you up with some sort of gig while you're out there, huh?
I'm totally in.
I was talking about this the other day. We need somebody like the Maloofs to be involved in the sport. You know, the Maloofs need to get involved with volleyball for one reason.
When the doors were closing the AVP, the people were talking to their group, and that was kind of exciting for about 3 minutes. Just a thought.
You mean like when they called in and the computer answered? They were like,
in the daydream of the Maloofs being part of the AVP was just fantastic.
Just billions of dollars backing you.
Billions, yeah. And then the Palm, meeting lobster mash between matches at the King of the Beach at the Palm. It just was exciting.
Well, that discussion about where beach is going is continuing. I know you talked to Albert Hanneman this week. We're going to have him on next week, but he's got some new information.
The National Volleyball League, the NVL, you can check out the website. Albert Hanneman with some exciting news, and he's going to be on next Monday. And, you know, guaranteed three tournaments at 50 grand, and they're hoping for another three at 150 grand, kind of like a triple crown. So right now he thinks he's going to have six tournaments, which I think is really cool, J.J. Roche. At least, you know, we know we have something. I'm not sure what the USAV is going to do. We keep going back and forth on that. But let's say they have four. That could get it up to 10. But, you know, Albert's excited. He's got some great people backing him in some great events. You know, they're doing co-promotion, co-promoters. So, like, they would open May 20th and 21st at the Preakness. You know, Preakness has been running for 136 years. They would do one with the Motherlode in Leon up there in Colorado. Todd Goronsky in Milwaukee, there's a music festival. You know, all these kind of things and these events that are already happening, volleyball could be a part of those. So it could be really exciting. Paddle championships, the East Coast Surfing Championships in Virginia Beach, you know, beach volleyball alongside with that.
Hey, if you want to get involved in the show today or any other day, 347-677-1525 is the number. You can call us. We have caller screening. You can talk to Reed before you get here on the air. But I want to let you know that one of the things that this show offers you as a listener is an opportunity to speak to some of the highest people in the sport. People in the USA Volleyball Office are listening. People who are associated with the AVP are listening. Albert Hanneman is listening. Top college coaches are listening. I'm sure NCAA officials are aware of us and trying to pin us with a violation somehow.
Russ Rose loves us. Well, at least I dream that he does.
But these people out there are listening to this program. So if you have an opinion about something in the world of volleyball, it doesn't even have to be the topic we're talking about today, because we address the whole world of volleyball. Call us, 347-677-1525, and get in on what's happening. Give us a question or an opinion.
You know, we all know my love of Reed. It's no secret. Do you think people just call into the show just to talk to him for a minute because they know he's the call screener?
Well, now they will. They didn't know that before.
It's a shot to talk to Reed for 30 seconds.
I think it throws people off, to be honest with you.
They're like, Reed, it's really Reed.
They think they're on air because they don't know that we're so technologically advanced that we actually have call screening now, that they're like, there was no introduction. There's usually a long pause, like, you didn't bring me in, like, this is Todd Rogers, the champ, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, where we're guessing who's on, introducing one person, and then all of a sudden it's someone in a bathroom somewhere speaking to us.
You know, what was up with the AVP Facebook fan page?
Well, they have 30,000 fans, first of all.
Yeah. But
secondly, there's all kind of polling about where they should play a tournament, which is interesting. I just wonder who's posting this stuff. Is that Nick, while he's in the bathroom on his iPhone, just putting in you know...
Nick from a car phone in the bathroom.
I
always thought it was David Williams, no? I thought he was running that during the tour days.
Now, there have been new posts up there on the Facebook page, and there's tons of fans. That's going to a lot of different places, getting a lot of impressions, and they're just polling about where tournaments should be outside of California or outside of Hermosa and Manhattan. I don't know if they have plans or just dreaming. What's going on with that?
There's still 30,000 people on that
30,000 fans. Yeah, it's a lot.
It's pretty good, right?
By the way, Castaway was on TV last night. My wife had never seen it, so we rented it. But
it's a great one.
Oh, man, what a great plug that was for the AVP and Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, Lambo sang about it. It was beautiful. That ball, I mean, that was like his bro, Tom Hanks. Imagine being on that island for 4 years. I mean, you would actually think that ball was alive. Imagine the ball control you would have, just peppering off rocks. And just working on your setting against the mountain. It'd just be unbelievable out there.
How about Tom Hanks' transformation in that? From dumpy FedEx guy to super star dude.
Yeah, with like the raddest long gray beard of all time. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
He did some gnarly things, like pulled out his own teeth.
Oh.
Yeah.
With an ice skate.
And then the fire. You know,
wasn't the dentist name Spalding?
I make fire.
The dentist name was Spalding, wasn't it? You had the Wilson the ball and you had Spalding.
Wilson
the
and Spalding? Someone in volleyball was behind that movie. Where are they now when we really need them?
Yes, help.
Hey, any thoughts on last week? We had Todd Rogers, we had Jordan Larson, both on the show.
Jordan needs to work on her backhand, or else she's never going to beat Reed in ping pong. I thought, I like her. I think she's a big-time baller. I wonder what her role is going to be come 2012. She's going to be a major player on that U.S. national team, and how much is playing internationally helping her. But she seems like a kid that, it's got it all together to me.
Yeah, I like the way she approaches the game.
Aggressive, by the way. She's like an aggressive player. I like that.
And I just want her to – maybe we'll give her a list of questions next time before she comes on.
Her size were fantastic.
Because it's about 10 seconds of dead air and then 25 seconds of good air, I thought.
She made you feel like a great reporter, though. She'd be like, oh, man. And then she would answer. It was fantastic.
No one's ever asked me that before.
Raji wasn't doing the dishes. That was cool. Bottom line, I don't know what you gather listening to Todd, but – the FIVB is the one thing that is for sure going on, and the top players have to go with what's viable right now, and that's the FIVB. So I feel like I talked to Furby this weekend as well. His daughter had her 5-year-old birthday party. It was a great place to meet up. And we talked about it. It's like the bottom line is this. Those players all would love to have something. And if there is something with some money, I think they'll come back and play. But right now, the top players have to commit to the FIVB.
Well, you hit it right there, the money. Oh, yeah. And that's what Todd said. It's all about the money, and it comes down to prize money. And I wonder when you talk about Albert, how he's going to put together 50-50, 150. I mean, that's a lot of scratch. anytime. Forget when things are a little tight and advertisers want an ROI on everything.
That's not including what J. Rowe's going to cost and what I'm going to cost.
Oh, there's another 100 right there.
How are we splitting that 100?
I don't know. I'm talking 90-10.
But I think that's what it's going to come down to is the cash. These two folks have to be able to make a living and have a reasonable expectation they can support families and wives and have a real income. And we'll just have to see. 3 years. We're about 6 months in. So that's something we will continue to follow. Hey, big news for Texas. Texas starts their own television network.
20-year deal.
How about that?
$300 million. Around the clock, Texas program, the only university to have this. They're going to have coaches' shows. They're going to have educational shows. They're going to have sports center-style shows. They're going to have a studio on campus. It's huge for the Olympic sports. I believe they have, what, 8 hoops games and a football game. But the Olympic sports, your volleyball, water polo, it's going to be huge for them because they're all going to be on TV.
So you think that they're going to have to fill that space with Olympic-style sports because they have a limited amount of basketball, football?
Yeah, but remember, their partners are IMG and ESPN.
Right.
So that's huge for them as well.
Are IMG and ESPN going to staff it with students, or are they going to bring you an IM?
You know, that seems to be the question, and believe me, I have my people working on it, but Barnett and McGee should be a part of the Texas Sports Network.
That's what I'm talking about.
They don't have to move us to Austin, but we need to be doing some of those games.
I'd say it's a...
And the Net Live needs to be in Austin.
Oh, we're
going.
And
I've talked to Jared about that. Russ Rose is having us out. Jay's having us out for the men.
That moment fell apart.
Oh, it did. Okay, that's not happening. Love to get the memo on that next
we're
time
still
before
working
I just
on
go
it.
In front of millions and talk about it.
We're still working on it.
Still working on it.
It's going to happen eventually.
We're going to go somewhere.
Not in 2 weeks. Yeah. No, I think it's a really neat thing because Texas is one of those icons. I mean, you look at the horn, the Texas Bull, you see them everywhere. That Texas thing is everywhere. I mean, you walked by, even on the Strand down here, you have a Texas shirt on, someone's going to throw a hook 'em right at you. And I think if you're going to be successful with a brand, that's going to be it. I thought there was an interesting article about Nebraska fans maybe being a little grouchy.
Oh, there's going to be
some
grouchy people.
Nebraska didn't get their own network.
And, you know,
how many other universities can support that type of thing?
Obviously, Texas, a chance to move to the Pac-10, Pac-12, whatever you want to call it. And the Big Ten stayed right where they were, got this TV deal, obviously, you know, a lot to do with it as well.
How many other universities could support that type of agreement?
Texas is large, my friend.
Yeah. Well, both the university, but also we're talking about the reach.
I'm talking about the reach.
And the recognition that
state
receives. Can Nebraska do it? Is that big enough? Is there another university that's recognized nationwide or worldwide in a way that Texas is?
I don't think you could do it as a network, but a lot of these universities, even Loyola Marymount, have I think they're like closed-loop networks, so it just goes within the school. And I'm sure you could put those online. And if you just pull from a lot of different schools and use the online platform with a lower budget, I think you could make it work.
Wait a minute. Did we just hear Texas compared to Loyola Marymount?
You just drop in a Lions plug?
You know what? I'm doing what I can with them.
I think
sore spot. I wish I could rehash with, you know, like you do with Sully all the time, even though you're on the bad end of the stick there.
Yeah.
But, there's no.
I've often said that, and we're going to have Rick McLaughlin, your former coach, on this show within the next few weeks.
Yeah. Great guy.
He did a great job there, and that was a great program when you guys were
there.
He
built it, yeah.
Yeah, but when Reed was there, I mean, they were a top 5 team, top 8 team in the country, and making the playoffs and making a run. And
for about 2 years.
Yeah, and for that to go away and San Diego State to go away, I'm not getting over those.
I feel like that program had just achieved critical mass. Yeah. They were terrible for a long time. They just couldn't get the athletes, couldn't get over the hump. We'd go down and just beat the heck out of them. And then a couple years later, they got into that rhythm where they had players like Reed. They had a few other guys that could really put the ball away. And they were good.
They were good.
They were gone.
You know, and if you're in the men's volleyball fraternity, it's a small fraternity. There's no like, hey, you guys have no program. Everyone's bummed. I'm still bummed that San Diego State does not have a program. I am still bummed that LMU does not. This is not. It's not a good thing. No. You know, I loved playing those teams. You know, I had friends that played for those teams.
It takes so long too for a guy like Rick to build recruiting. You know, the recruiting credibility, and I think he got to a point where he had people taking a serious look at Loyola Marymount, and you know, right when he reached that point, the rug was pulled out, and that's what's so disappointing. It's not just the. And you could say, yeah, there was only a couple good years, but those were very important good years, I think.
True. Now, many people may not know this, but Reed was not an outside hitter when he first came to Loyola Marymount.
Someone tell me what he was.
Setter. Set for a couple of seasons.
Ironically, he is now a setter again in his career.
That's a rebirth.
A rebirth. Loy I don't know if you guys follow him on Twitter.
Loy Ball,
you
watch
should.
Out.
Reed Pretty, that, set his all team.
That I'm telling you, just like I wrote on Twitter, it was a dream come true. They were doing the double sub, you know, the All-Star game. It was weird. We flew all night, arrived at 8 a.m. To the hotel, only to be told that we had serve and pass with 800 fans watching in 2 hours. So try to get some rest. and then we go that night to do a serving contest, a bounce contest, which, by the way, I was in. I was the only one, okay? This is a packed gym, okay? The only one who – I had three spikes. My first two spikes I hit in the top of the tape.
No way.
I can't even tell you how long that walk was.
Was it set? Low set?
It was a low set. It was. Mm-hmm.
You can see Barnett's face.
Yeah, he's laughing at me. No, I really believe – I don't bounce a lot. So I think it comes as a surprise that I was actually in the bounce contest.
Should have called Jake.
But I should have grabbed Hanson. I had Humutsky setting me, who – it was a joy to play with him, by the way. He's 42 years old and still balling. Finally
– like he's 42 years old since he was 20 years old.
Yeah.
So finally coming into his own.
Yeah.
I can't even tell you, though, with all those people hitting two balls in the net in a row and just walking from that point to the back line – I just felt like it took an hour. So finally, I had a respectable bounce, maybe even one of the highest bounces, my third try. But when you hit two in the net, you're not considered as a winner. But yeah, then the next night got a chance to dish the rock a little bit. And I'll tell you, it's a little bit easier when you're setting 7-plus-foot guys. And I had some fun with that.
So Corin Bemis not measuring up to setting the All-Star team out there?
Yeah, no, you know, backtrack, Rick never had setting in the scope for me at LMU. I was a setter in high school, got recruited to SC as a setter, got bumped by Donald Sujo.
Huh. See that.
By the time I got to LMU, was transitioned right away into an outside hitter because they already had Steve Dunn and Zane Smythe.
And then Kurt Peters.
That's right.
Dude, we are way inside baseball at the moment with
the
men's game in the
so
late 90s.
So resetting in the All-Star game, is that like Roddy White playing quarterback at the Pro Bowl? Like, isn't that...
Wouldn't that be cool?
Is that what it's like? All of a sudden, Reed's just setting the All-Star game?
There's a few wide receivers out there who were former quarterbacks who were all-pro quality. Somebody should do that in the Pro Bowl. Stick them in there.
What happened was it was the second set, and basically they kept on subbing out the setters for the opposites because they were doing the double sub thing. And I realized, I was just like, wait a second, we're not going to let me set, coach. So I get in there and I actually did a few good things during that set. So by the fourth set, we were absolutely smoking him. It was like 22-12. And he was about to make another sub. And I was like, hey, coach, I'm ready. And he's like, all right, go for it. So I go out there and I only needed to get like two side outs and we win the match. And I didn't do as well, truth be told, at that point. Tried to run a few quicks.
You tried to go
back,
didn't you? You tried to go right away.
Yeah, I tried to set a go, and literally it went like 2 meters beyond the antenna. But we pulled it out, you know, made it fun for the fans, and my dream is I can retire.
Please come on back.
I just want Macasa to change the back of Volleyball Magazine as I sit here and look at my issue of Volleyball Magazine. I have Reed with the cartoon, and we mentioned this a few weeks ago. About you being turned into a superhero with the thought bubble that says, taste my Mikasa. Did you approve this text for yourself, Reed?
I have so much trust for those guys over there that they just get a carte blanche with. Except he wanted to run one ad that he cut out like the bladder of a volleyball and he made me wear it as a hat. You might see it floating around on Facebook. I'm not okay with that one, but he loved it. They loved it. But, but yeah, I think you're just jealous you don't have a cartoon of yourself, Barney.
Oh, listen, I'll figure out how to get it done. I like that even
Gardhoff is working on it as we speak.
Taste My Mikasa. Love it. There's a Brazilian guy trying to get you. That's the back of Volleyball Magazine. Speaking of Volleyball Magazine, reading through it this week, enjoying some of the articles and stuff about the cure for the winter blues, about Turks and Caicos. Looked like a fun night, fun days, playing volleyball, partying all night. A little bit of DJ going on by our own DJ Roche. Shot of him with the glow with his computer. But also, a gentleman with an armband skying over the net on the beaches there.
The highest I've ever reached in my entire
life. I was going to say, that's your highest contact spot.
For sure. And that ball was 8 feet out of bounds.
And what page is that on for those people at home that have? Go look at page 18. What is the guy doing blocking?
He had no business.
I've never seen the tippy toe block before.
No, he's not off the air. And the guy who's digging, he's been out in the sun for about 3 days. He looks like Tom Hanks, except he has the tank top on. It's not good at all.
And I'll tell you what. Truth be told, that ball went out by 7 feet.
For sure.
He went to the coffin corner. You know,
he mentioned
best spot
that
on the floor.
And actually, as I dissected it, as I took my professionally trained eye and looked at the ball and the contact position with the hand, you can tell he's way under it. He's not going to wrap over the top of that.
He's batching.
Yeah, that's going flat to the ocean. That might have made the water.
It was close, but I got to say, I look good, and that's really all.
No, it's a great photo. Yeah. It's a great photo, great article, and we appreciate you being in Volleyball Magazine. Nice job, J-Rell.
Yeah, I'm here for you.
Hey, another side note here, athletes fighting hunger. We got a note about an event going on down in Huntington Beach coming up pretty soon with athletes and the proceeds going to fight hunger around the United States. So we'll have more information on that. I think Ryan Mariano, former Long Beach State player, involved with that. It's a pro-am that's going on. We'll have a little more information for you, perhaps up on the Facebook site. They have a Facebook page.
Anybody watch football?
I've heard of it.
Because I certainly did. Had the day off yesterday and did nothing but that. I actually played volleyball in the morning, so sore today. It's amazing. Three games will do that to you. That might not sound like a lot to you guys, but it is to me.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah. Well, maybe next time. And
I'd be in need of surgery had I played three games.
And then I sat on that couch, and I just watched. And my favorite guy now is Caleb Haney.
Bears third string emergency quarterback.
Third string QB. That guy was amazing yesterday. But everything on the radio today is about Jay Cutler. He is getting torched, and he's getting torched by other guys in the league because he did not play. Reed, you're over there in Russia. You guys are, you're still playing. When you see a guy get hurt or he just kind of takes himself out of the game and doesn't go back in a game of that magnitude, what are your thoughts on that?
He has to be really hurt. I remember Colt McCoy last year. Same thing. He just he wanted to go back out there in the national championship game, quarterback for Texas, and just had a dead arm. And it's one of those things as an athlete, under those conditions, you have to believe that he absolutely cannot go. And that's, I mean, if there's any doubt that he's kind of milking this or it's not that serious, then there's no reason he should be in that position in the first place.
I think part of the problem is the way he looked on the sideline. He has bad body language anyway, magnified by 1,000 in that game. It just didn't look good. He wasn't supportive. He looks, as I told Jay Roche and Barney before we went on, it looked like he sharted. He looked uncomfortable. and for me, I get up and do something. But for the guys in the league to do it on Twitter, I don't know if they realize the power of Twitter. I was listening to Jim Rome talk about it today. And, that goes out to millions and millions of people. So, Urlacher came to his defense, said, hey, he's a tough guy. He's as tough as we have. And, if he's hurt, he's hurt. But it definitely is an interesting situation. To see guys in the league pile on another guy is rare.
I don't think Cutler is well-respected at all. I don't think he has been for some time. He's come off as kind of a whiner and a self-serving guy, both in Denver and maybe here in Chicago. I thought it was good that Urlacher jumped on it and said, no, the guy's tough. He's out there getting hit all the time. And I'll agree with that. He's been out there just getting pummeled. Their offensive line has not done a great job, and that's been the whole season. But you're right about his attitude on the sideline. He just looked disinterested and uninvolved in what was happening rather than transitioning into, I got to help this young guy so we can win this game and go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Now, if Peyton Manning was injured, you would see Peyton Manning talking to the next guy.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and I can't imagine if Clay Stanley tweaks something in the Olympics and he pulls himself out of that Brazil match. I can't imagine Reed and guys lighting him up on Twitter. I just don't think, or anybody watching that match. You just wouldn't think that. It's real interesting that guys around the league would jump on it. Because that's a small fraternity. They usually have each other's back.
And why jump on it? Why jump into that situation? If you're not on his team, you're not involved with what's happening, why even make that a priority for what you're doing? That's part of what Goodell was talking about. He's talking about trash talk and trying to get rid of that trash talk element. That's now creeping into players trash talking each other outside of games they're even involved in, because we've had a lot of stuff between the Jets and every team they play, yeah, or certain teams and certain players, but now it's creeping into, I'm not even at the game, I'm out of the playoffs, and I'm getting on this guy who's in the playoffs still.
And when they come back and say he's questionable, questionable means he maybe can go back in. It's on him. You got to say he either tore his MCL or ACL, he is out for the game. And yeah, he's in the locker room, goodbye. And he hobbles back on the field and watches.
The management of that, though, is the organization, too. They don't want to put it out there that he's definitely not coming back, because that word will get back to the other sideline. They want to keep that possible, but at the same time, it sort of screws the player that, oh, maybe he's not tough enough to be out there.
The Fat Man pick six by BJ was unbelievable. That dance in the end zone was cool.
Yeah, he nearly had a Leon Lett moment, though. Had the ball out. Caleb Haney chopped it. How about that play? That was nice. And all right, last thing on this. Who calls an end around on 3rd-and-3 with 50 seconds to go?
Coach Martz does.
Hey, Martz.
That was awful.
You know what? This is not a situation where you go, oh, we're going to trick him. You just go with what works. You have two good running backs. You run the ball.
Minute 30. Let's run the fly sweep. 3rd-and-4. It's just not working.
Terrible. I've been involved in a couple of situations similar to that, where you get to a championship match and it's panic time, and we just stick with what got us here. We don't make a couple changes, or we make too many changes. It's always, if it comes out fine, you're a genius. Mike Martz, offensive genius, if that end around goes for 20 yards or 25 or gets in the end zone or something, right? Offensive genius. Or you get what I just said, and you're an idiot for doing that.
Gardhoff said he looked like Marvin Hall dancing in the end zone, by the way. Big lineman. We got to get Marvin on here.
Marvin was a far better dancer.
Marvin was a great dancer.
I love that SCSU 34 was at the game. I thought about going to the game. Looked at tickets.
SCSU 34 has been cracking me up because we were doing some Modern Family earlier. I don't know if you haven't seen last Wednesday's episode. It was such a zesty performance. You should make sure you get out there and watch it.
You're listening to Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. We have the College Volleyball Weekly coming up. We have Mark Swindell, University athlete, coming up. But first,
Fergie.
Right on the other side of this break, Bill Ferguson.
Number one in the country.
Number one. Men of Troy, NCAA men's game.
Trojan.
Just a minute. I'm Kevin. He's Geeter. You're listening to DJ Roche. And Reed's on the phones from Russia. The Net Live, right back. Hey, parents. Do you know about the USYVL, the United States Youth Volleyball League? Having taught over 100,000 kids ages 7 to 15 the sport of volleyball, the league's proven techniques, super fun approach, and self-esteem lifting methods are unmatched. Truly, volleyball starts here. For more information about the league and programs in your area, visit usyvl.org. That's usyvl.org.
Keep it moving.
Net Live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. Thanks for listening in. Another good Monday. I'm enjoying DJ Roche's tunes. Getting some fun out of that. Hey, we're going to get to our first interview here in just a moment, but we had a lot of action on the chat board talking about an incident that went on in Russia just this morning. And it was a bombing, a suicide bombing is the early word, with 31 people dead in an airport in Russia. And Reed, we know you were in that airport just yesterday. How are you feeling about the whole situation?
I was shocked, man. I got a ton of texts right after practice tonight, and it's surreal. It's sad, sad to hear it. And yeah, I was in right there for 5 hours. And it's gnarly. It's gnarly that people just continue to do this in this day and age.
It's always a scary thought, it was for me, when you're on the national team and you're flying so much, once you have a family and you're flying away and you're on your own and you're with the team and flying a lot of different aircraft and airlines and in different countries. And it always does, for me at least, cross my mind a few times. Like, all right, I'm in Argentina on an Argentinian airline that we nearly put the wing in the ground on the way down.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard bank, stuff you wouldn't normally see in the United States. I feel a little less comfortable. And then if something like this happened, certainly would make me certainly even less comfortable with what's going on.
Yeah, there's some activity also about Marvin Hall on the message boards. Not quite sure what he's going through right now, but apparently he's in the hospital. So, of course, our thoughts and prayers go out to our good friend Marvin Hall. And when we get an update, we'll definitely be sharing it on the NetLife.
Yeah, Marvin Hall, Pierce alumni. Great guy.
Yep.
I've known for a long time.
You know, he brought a lot of us into volleyball. He started the club out in the 818 in the Valley. Coley Kyman, myself, and Ken Lynch, and a lot of guys played for that club. Jimmy Klein, David Martin. So, you know, a lot of guys, and we were all, you know, back in the late 80s just groveling around playing volleyball, learning the game. Marvin was a big part of it.
Well, that's a little bit of sad news, but we'll keep you updated on anything we know about that situation. In the meantime, let's get back to business as usual here on the Net Live. We have guest number one.
Guest number one, a good friend of mine. He is the coach of the USC Trojans, currently number one in the country at 4-0, off to their best start in the MPSF. Bill Ferguson, who I coached with for many years, we won two JO's titles together back in 1997, 1999. Fergie, always got to plug the titles. How are you, buddy? Good to have you on.
Good, thanks. Good to see you, or talk to you at least.
Hey, Bill, so you got all those guys returning from a couple of years ago when you guys made that run to the national championship, or at least the core returning. What is the goal for this team? And talk about the hot start you guys have had.
Well, you know, we're looking at this year a whole lot differently than we have before. You know, when we were, you know, 2 years ago, you know, most of those guys were freshmen and sophomores. We had a couple older guys, and we just kind of stayed loose, got our hair on fire, and just went for it. And, you know, last year I think I think there was a collective put the cart before the horse attitude, and a lot of the guys came back, you know, spent a lot of time over the summer working on themselves and working hard, and really a tribute to them as people and how they responded. You know, it's all great when everything's good, but when you see somebody respond positively to a situation that maybe isn't so fantastic, it was it's really gratifying to be in the gym with these guys every day, because they're, you know, we're just working on us, we're worrying about us, and we're taking everything day by day. I know it's a cliche, but there's a reason why things are cliches.
Yeah. You know, Ferg, was it maybe something looking back last year that the team maybe had some trouble with the expectations or handling the success from the year before?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there was we just didn't execute. That was the bottom line. I think to our credit and to the guys' credit, we got our act together the last six matches of the season. We went 5-1 in our last six, and we're playing good volleyball. And it just came down to, you know, we were at 30 all in the third set at the Ridge in a pretty crazy match. Yep. And you know, they got a, you know, controversial call. They aced us. They went up 2-1, and we just didn't have enough to come back. So season ended there, and, you know, I kind of figured whoever won that match was going to end up in the Final Four, and that's kind of what happened, and in your Ridge made it. We didn't, and thank goodness we're responding well.
You know, Fergie, I never take any gratitude or joy in having the Ridge beat you. You know that, buddy. Come on.
Yes, she did.
No, not
that's
Fergie.
Absolute,
not Fergie. Come
listen,
on, Fergie and I are tight.
You don't have to blow smoke just because he's on the air.
Now, Bill, Riley McKibben, you know I love setters. Talk about this kid and what kind of leader he has become.
He's been fantastic. He and Murph both have been driving the bus. You know, he's a fiery guy on the court. He doesn't, you know, he's not one of those guys that stands out in a crowd. But when he gets on the court, the guy competes like crazy. And he has really led by example this year. Been one of the hardest working guys in the weight room, in the gym. He's always competed in the gym. He's just, you know, he's not afraid to run in. And I don't know if you saw the highlight on YouTube, but, you know, he anticipated an overpass in the Irvine match and basically slid in towards the center of the court on the attack line and took an overpass and dug it, and we ended up winning the point. And that was, you know, that's just kind of it's really an example of kind of where he's been this year since he came back. He's been a kid's mission.
That's on YouTube, Fergie, so our people can get out there and watch it?
Yeah, there's two clips from the Irvine match. There's one, or actually you can go to our blog. It's on the uscripsit.com blog, I believe. And there's one play where they set Carson Clark a red. Murphy's front row, Riley's back row. Murphy digs a really sharp angle. I mean, Carson gets on it pretty good. He digs a line drive right over the net to Kevin Wynn, who is right there, jumps, and just gets a hold of it. Riley anticipates the play and basically slides into second base with his hands up and digs the ball.
Wow.
I don't even know how the guy saw it coming. And then, so it's a pretty phenomenal play. And then the other play that's up there was the ball that Murphy kicked over the net. He's laying down a couple feet back from the attack line, about 5 feet out of bounds. He and Riley both went for a ball, and Murph fell down, and all he could do was he was laying on his back, and he kicked it over the net, and we ended up winning the point two, which tied the score at 24 in the second set.
You're listening to Bill Ferguson here on the Net Live on thevolleyballnetwork.com. Bill, we've talked a lot on this program about the business of volleyball and getting people in the seats. And you're talking about all these spectacular plays that have happened and people go to YouTube to see it. Not enough people are seeing this in person. And last week we had an article about Brian Gimolero at Long Beach State talking about some of the challenges associated with getting people into the seats and into his program. What are you doing with your program to promote the people on the team and get folks in the stands and raise the visibility?
Well, marketing has been much more involved in what we're doing this year. And part of that is marketing. Part of it's, you know, Pat Hayden coming in here and wanting to, you know, hey, we've got a number one team. Why can't we get more butts in the seats? they've got us on, they're marketing us within the school quite a bit. You know, they had the whole team and myself on the floor at halftime of one of the basketball games. Our guys have been on the row, fraternity and sorority row, passing out flyers. So we're doing a little bit of guerrilla marketing. We're, I believe, offering a few matches for free this year, which will allow, you know, first of all, easy for everybody to attend. Second of all, real easy compliance-wise to let, you know, the junior club players and stuff like that in, you know, without them having to pay. So that's going to be a good thing for us, we think. And they're putting us up on they're marketing us on the internet a little bit more, sending stuff to our alumni, to our fan base. So those are some of the things that off the top of my head. I don't know if any of them sound real gaudy yet, but we'll see. Well, you know, our first match against Alberta, which, you know, in January it wasn't big numbers, but, you know, we were over, you know, we were between 500 and 1,000 for that, which for our first match out of the chutes in January before school starts isn't bad. But, you know, we want to be at like 3,000 an event. If we can get to that point, then fantastic.
Fergie, you know, I always reflect back to the Northridge days, of course, because they were the greatest days of my life. But also we talked about on the show because – I'm sorry, I had to get that in there.
Oh, no, that's your wife. That's nice.
Don't worry about that. but honestly, Fergie, and I say this to other people and my friends in coaching, and I know you have Cam Green on that staff. He was a part of that run. What we used to do back then, and I think people have to do it, and I think they've gotten away from it, is the guys have to get out into the school and the community and let their and get their friends involved, get their fraternities involved, and get other athletes involved. There's no reason why Galen shouldn't have 3,000 people. Number one, phenomenal facility. Number one, on campus. I mean, number two, it's on campus. Number three, you're the number one team in the country. I mean, these guys are good. They're fun to watch. These are high-level games. There's no reason why you can't get students out there. They go have some dinner. They do a quick rage. They come out. They have fun. It's social. You got to get your guys out there for it because there's no reason why Galen should not just be pumping.
Yeah, they're hammering the row pretty good. We do have a bunch of guys that are in fraternities, and they're working. I think the Lambda Chi House is probably our largest group that attends. So hats off to those guys. We got a bunch of Lambda Chi's on our team, and their house comes and supports us big time. And you know, we've got some SAEs that are out there that are coming on in. So you know, any of those things help. You know, those guys all help. So it's getting better, and they're more conscious of it. I think we got a pretty savvy group of guys on our team. We got a lot of business and marketing majors, so they're really working on it.
For $100 an hour, I'll do a seminar. Just get me out there. I'll go out there with the kids. Time to keep the Galen Center.
I'm sure you will.
I'm not kidding around. Upset right now.
Fergie, we know you're the head of the beast over there, but any successful program has several people working for it, and you have several good assistant coaches. Cameron Green was mentioned by Geeter just a moment ago. You also have Jeff Nygaard, couple-time Olympian, and J.J. Riley, who I played with at Pepperdine. Talk about how you divvy up the duties between those assistants.
That's a hell of a staff.
Yeah, I think so. I may be biased, but, you know, in generalities, you know, J.J. is talking to the setters and working with the offense, and Nygs is working with the middle blockers and the defense. This staff, you know, Cam probably, you know, and Cam's, you know, kind of with the outside hitters and the liberos. But for the most part, this staff divides everything up much more so than in the past. We've been fairly divided prior to this year. But everybody hits on everything. So, you know, if it really comes down to it, yeah, you know, when we're in a match, Jeff's charting the other team and what their offense is doing. And JJ is charting what we're doing. And another really important guy we have is John Scott. He's our technical coordinator, and he runs the whole data volley program for us. And he's gotten to the point where he's not only punching code, he's reading it as we go, and he's starting to help out and calling stuff out and seeing things that are pretty important. He actually was our first match against Northridge, I believe it was. Alberta, he had a call out of a timeout and nailed it. He called exactly what they were going to run. We all looked at each other and said, all right, let's do it. Got a commit out of it and got the stuff and kept the point scoring and run alive. So all four of those guys, Cam, John Scott, JJ, and Nygs, are all doing a phenomenal job. The guys seem to respond great to them, and you know, they certainly make my job a heck of a lot easier.
I want to know if anyone on that team can actually outbench JJ Riley.
No, not a
question. Absolutely.
Well, you know, it's a cool part of that is they're really, you know, a lot of coaches are do as I say, not as I do, and JJ can get in there and really, you know, there's not a lot of guys that are going to look at him if he says, hey, you got to hit it hard in the weight room, that are going to look at him and go, yeah, right.
Yeah, JJ, I remember a few years ago when he was coaching for my club, there was like five JJs. I mean, he was as big, he would walk in and be like, dude, are we at a weightlifting competition or is this a club volleyball tournament? I mean, he was monstrous. Great setter, by the way. Great setter, JJ.
Yeah, very good technical guy and one of the last Harlan guys out there.
We could have won a national championship if he was healthy.
Good point.
We could have gone a lot further. Actually, maybe even won just maybe a playoff game. Let's set our sights low.
Hey, Fergie, the maturation of Tony Cirelli. Talk about him and now that he is in his junior year and how far he's come.
That guy did more over the summer to improve himself than anybody on our team. He completely changed his body composition. It was one of those deals where Tony's always been in good shape, and Tony's always been a really hard worker in the weight room. He basically went and he changed his body composition, changed the way he ate. He wasn't like a big guy or anything like that, but he just became more efficient. He has a phenomenal attitude. He's always been, you know, the most competitive kid on planet Earth. There's no questioning that ever. He's always worked hard. Now he's paying attention to the minor details. He is, I think he was probably a serving target for us. You know, when other teams looked at us the last 2 years, he is our statistically our best passer right now. He's worked on his blocking quite a bit. He's really paid attention to little things. He's been phenomenal. Been really fun to coach this year.
Fergie, who are some of the other teams that you look at and say, that can be a dangerous team? Obviously, Irvine, you guys have a great match with them.
Yeah, they're, they've got some things that will make them real tough down the line. I think you got to look at you got to look at Stanford and BYU. You know, forget about the Outrigger record. Hawaii is going to be a handful. Them and Stanford, you know, they handled Stanford, I think, in three in the first over there last weekend. And then, Stanford, Hawaii handled them, and then they beat Stanford in five. So who knows? The Stanford-BYU matches were close. I mean, it's kind of everybody's eating their young right now. But, you know, if you look at Stanford, they've already – they're already done with Hawaii, and they're already done with BYU. So that's something if you look at down the line. those are pretty big hurdles to be over. They're 3-1 in those four matches with those two teams. So any team that passes that well that's got probably four of their tougher matches of the year behind them already with a 3-1 record, they're going to be awful difficult to play, that's for sure.
Fergie, you joined this program just a few years ago. So many of the coaches in the men's game have a long history. When you came to SC, it's a program that had been through several head coaches in quite a short time. What were your priorities in order to bring it back to where you have at this point?
Well, we had to get good on the court, and we had to get good off the court. We weren't very good academically or athletically. And the first thing we did was talked about as one of my alums, the first thing we did was establish the Distinguished Speaker Series, and we got a lot of guys that were former Trojan athletes that were great students as well, and we had those guys come in and sit down and talk with our team about what it was like to be a Trojan, to be a great athlete, to be a great student. And to really excel. And, you know, ironically enough, the first guy that we had come in and talk to us was Pat Hayden. And, you know, I thought that at the time there was no better example of a guy that came in and was, you know, that, you know, exemplified student athlete and, you know, was successful professionally in both sports and the private sector. And, you know, how cool is that for our kids to have that guy be the leader of our athletic department and to be an example for these guys? So, he was one of the guys that came in. Paul McDonald was an academic All-American as a football player here. We had tons of volleyball guys come in and talk from, you know, the Yardleys. You know, Hobbs spoke into the guys. You know, it's been cool. The alumni has been coming back. And that was the other thing is we had to educate our guys as to, you know, how great the tradition and the history was here. A lot of these guys, you know, SC was – a lot of these guys at the time had never been alive when SC was good in volleyball. So we really had to kind of ram home that, hey, there's an expectation here, and this is who came before you and what you represent. And, you know, we did that, and, you know, obviously we trained on the court and trained off the court. We were the number one team academically last year in the department, so that was something I was real proud of. So we're getting, you know, we always want to do well academically, which we are. We always want to compete for conference and national championships, which we are at this point and hope to continue to. So, you know, that's been the whole mantra. And, you know, what, 3 years into it, we were close. Last year wasn't quite as good. And this year looks like we got things figured out so far. But we're only 2 weeks into the season, so I don't want to get too excited yet.
Yeah, Fergie, you know what I thought was really impressive, and you hit it on the head, was, you know, getting the Obradoviches and Hobbs and Brian Ivey type guys involved in that program and caring again. I thought that was really huge. And then, you know, I've stopped by a couple practices, and one thing I've noticed is you guys have really changed the culture. It's really impressive to go to one of your practices and see how many guys are in the program and how many guys are working hard. It's really impressive, man.
Thanks. It was cool. You know, Timmons has been to two of our matches already this year. you know, Hov's been around a lot. OB's been around a lot. You know, Dusty flew in from Utah to come, Dusty Dvorak, to play. You know, he didn't even play because he didn't want to hurt himself. But in our alumni game, we got, you know, Mark Beltran, who was an assistant coach under Bob Yoder and was a DS on those teams with Hov and Timmons and Dusty. He's now our one of our announcers on our webcasts, and he's in all the time. And he's really helped spur some support within the alumni. He gets these crazy email threads going. And, you know, Bill Stetson's a guy that's been around a lot, that's been real, and, you know, Bob, you know, Yoder, we can't wait till Corey graduates from Irvine. But there's been a lot of guys that have come back and helped. And, you know, it's been phenomenal to have these guys care and show our guys that they care and that they're, you know, they're there to support them. And the other thing we have is a mentor program that Mr. Garrett set up, and it still continues now. And so we've got all these mentors hooked up with our players that really help them with the whole beyond athletics thing. And these are all USC volleyball alums. We got a guy that's, you know, the head of the Tournament of Roses, and, you know, other guys that own huge corporations that are all mentoring our student athletes. So it's pretty phenomenal how much our alumni gives back.
Bill, you just mentioned mentoring, and we had Terry Pettit on this program a few weeks ago. He was talking about the importance of a head coach having a mentor group or an advisory panel. Who is it that you look to when you need advice? Who are the people that you will seek out?
It depends on what we're looking at. Sometimes it's anywhere from, you know, down the hall, the, you know, Coach O'Neill of the basketball team, or Coop, who's, you know, right next to me, or Mick, or, you know, sometimes, you know, a guy I've grown up as a big mentor to me was Gary Sato. He's someone that I talk to reasonably, you know, amount. So it really varies. I'm into volleyball. But to me, I like to, and Geeter probably knows this more about me than anybody, is I look to the other sports to see what's going on and how other sports look at what they're doing and their staffing and how they go about things. And, you know, I'd probably rather go over to Heritage Hall and check out what, you know, how Kiffin's tackling recruiting, and or how his staff divides their responsibilities and different statistics. Yeah. They look at stuff like that. So that's probably more my cup of tea.
You should ask Lane Kiffin how he doesn't win games yet. He gets a better job every year. But if you're looking at who you want to, if you're going to ask one person about your program who's going to tell you the truth, because there always has to be that person who's going to say the hard thing, is there one person in your life that will tell you the hard thing about what you're doing incorrectly or correctly?
Yeah. You know, Beltran's a guy that I talk to a lot. I probably talk to him 3-4 times a week. He sees us play all the time. He's going to be brutally honest. You know, he's definitely a guy that we'll talk to. And, you know, been there as a player, been there as an assistant coach. So, yeah, we talk. I probably talk to him quite a bit. I'm lucky in that I can look within our staff, too. I mean, Nigs and JJ may be young in some respects, but, you know, their experience is unbelievable.
Yeah, JJ will give it to you straight, that's for sure. Hey, if you're with your team, we spend a lot of time talking about international players and the international game here. Is there a player or a couple of players in your team that think you think have potential to impact the international game, and how aware are your players of the opportunities they may have to play beyond college?
They're pretty aware, and I think we got several. You know, the first three guys that jump to mind are you know, Murphy Troy, Austin Zahn, and Tony Chiarelli. I think Shandrick can have some impact. I think Tri Bourne can. You know, I see Tri could be, you know, like the next Lamborn. Just got really good ball control, outside hitter, could end up being a libero internationally. Can do everything right. Murphy is a guy that can play, you know, he plays opposite for us, but he passes every day and can hit on the left just as well as the right. Hits a bick just as well as he hits the D. So that's a guy that can come in and help our national team on the left. Austin, size, athleticism-wise, has got a lot of potential internationally. And I know him working with Nigs is really helping that out a lot. And then Tony, I mean, anybody with an arm like that's going to have a job someplace playing this game. And now that he's worked on the little things like passing, you know, he's now a guy that can do everything. He can block pretty well, he can serve and hit well and pass great. So, and they all can hit speed too, which I know has become a premium. So you get a guy that can hit a fast ball like Reed can, with a guy like Murphy's size, I mean, that's a pretty cool tool to have.
Yeah, much bigger than Reed, potentially a lot better, right?
Well, I that's a tall order. Reed's been proving it day in and day out for the last, 8-10 years. Well, longer than that. I remember when the guy was playing club volleyball, came out from God knows where and played for Seaside, and we're all, who's this guy?
Featherstone, just recruiting.
There's a funny recruiting story about him with Rick and Jim, too.
I'll have to get in on that. Yeah.
Thank you, Bill.
Yeah, apparently Rick and Jim apparently were living together, and Rick went to go see Reed play, and Jim was, I guess Rick had just got home from the airport or something, and Jim was like, hey, where were you? Well, I don't know. Just kind of like came in and bailed or so. There was something like that. So you'll have to talk to Reed about that. But
we'll talk to Rick about it when we have him on the program.
Yeah, we're going to have Rick on in a couple weeks.
Yeah, Rick totally sandbagged his brother. It's a pretty funny story.
Fantastic.
Bill Ferguson is in his fifth season with the USC Trojan Men and has them once again atop the standings. He's rebuilding the storied history of the USC Men's Trojan Volleyball program. Bill, thanks so much for joining us here on the Net Live. We appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure. Bye on, everybody.
New Orleans, 99.
There you go.
All right. See you, Bill.
See you guys. Thanks.
Fergie, good stuff, man. Yeah, keep that applause rolling.
He said something interesting about, we'll get to that later because we're going to break, aren't we?
Yeah, we got to take a little break, have a little water. Stretch.
I like the little Jimmy Mac, Ricky Mac fight for Reed pretty.
Yeah, we're going to.
I heard Reed laughing in the back.
I got some more details for that.
The Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. Still to come, the College Volleyball Weekly. We're going to talk all about this past week. A couple of great matches. You heard Fergie mention his battle with Irvine. Pepperdine also had a battle with Irvine. Mike Sonheimer will join us, Rob Asparo from Irvine, and Jay Hossick from Penn State. And finally, Mark Swindell. He'll also come on and talk about university athlete. That's going to be an interesting discussion. More dealings with the NCAA. The Net Live, right back. Sam down the hole, the Sammy down the hole, the Sammy down the hole, which way will I go, go, you never know, you never know, you never know the right way till you've been wrong, no one if you want to share, as your fair view, Eric, the one your march just disappears.
Net Live. Rocking now. Net Live on the mobilenetwork.com. We appreciate you being here on another Monday. Good stuff from Bill Ferguson.
Fergie.
I like his focus on restoring the glory of that program, and he had a good point about his kids now not knowing a time when SC was really good, because they used to be really good.
Fergie has always been about the history of the game, too. He's always, you know, picked the brains of the great ones, and he was around, you know, reffing during my days and stuff, and, you know, just a guy that really studied the game, and he studied other sports as well. And I remember John Price, when I was playing at Northridge, did a great job of that. We knew who the alumni were. They came to matches, and that's one thing I was always so impressed that Bill did. He got to SC. He reached out, because those guys weren't coming anymore. I mean, they were just giving up on the program. He got them back involved. He started retiring jerseys, you know, started doing pregame. You know, they had, like, meeting places where guys would show up, and it was a really cool thing. And he has done a fantastic job about it. And I told people when Fergie got the job, he can recruit. He can recruit. He's going to get kids that are going to want to come to USC. I mean, you're at USC, man. How would you not want to go there and play men's volleyball? And he's going to get those kids. You know, I coached club with Fergie for years. He did a phenomenal job of creating a culture. And I've been to the practices. I've been to Galen. It's awesome what's going on around there. I'm really impressed.
He came from the juniors world, so you know he can talk to those kids.
Oh, absolutely.
In touch with what those kids need to hear or are curious about with the program. So I think that's been a big deal. They didn't have a coach like that. You look at a Pat Powers, a great player, but didn't really have that same touch with the community that a person like Bill brings.
You know, in working with Fergie, one thing I always knew is he wanted to win. He wanted to win. And one thing he always talked about, and you know how people don't like dynasties or they're always pulling for the underdog? He was a guy that loved dynasties and loved the winner, loved the evil empire. And I like that about him. You know what I mean? You want to be one of those guys. You want to win all the time. If people want to knock you off, that's a good thing. That means you're winning. If you're the Patriots, yeah, of course everyone hates you because you've won a lot. And soon people are going to start hating the Steelers a lot.
I'm picturing
Fergie. They're just too good.
Picturing Fergie with the Darth Vader helmet on.
He would love that. He wants to win all the time. That's good.
Who's Yoda?
I don't know. JJ's too buff for Yoda.
I think you have to go all the way back to Harlan Cohen. He's Yoda.
And Fergie loves Harlan. He loves Asato and Marv and all those old school guys like that.
Who's Luke in the world of volleyball?
Ooh, John Sprague.
John Sprague? Ooh, not bad. Not bad. Who's Obi-Wan?
Jay Hossack. Obi-Wan has got to be Alf Gates.
Oh, yeah. He has more of the Darth Vader.
Yeah, actually, what am I saying?
He's Vader,
Darth, dude. He's Vader.
You could
for
take
sure.
off the helmet and see Al Skate's face, and you'd be yeah, of course.
He's absolutely Vader. Maybe Marv.
Marv, yeah, could be Marv. He could be Obi-Wan. Maybe Carl McGowan. Because definitely Carl is like off in the wilderness.
Yeah,
got his own
system. That's a great point.
He's in a cave. No one really knows what he's up to. You go and talk to him, and he's just going to tell you everything about your life and how you ought to do it.
Where in the world has this gone? Fantastic. Star Wars references and men's volleyball.
Well, this comes off the
who
football,
is Reed Pretty?
The football cover. Well, I thought he might be Luke.
Yeah, that's what I thought. You know, when you really
I was
got to be
you
a
were
player.
Say, I was thinking, yeah. I was baiting you for Reed Pretty on Luke.
Just because I love Reed, I always wanted to say.
So who's Leia? Who's his sister? That's the other question that he kind of is intrigued by.
Interesting. Destiny Hooker.
Ooh.
Just has the best name in
Logan
volleyball.
Tom.
That's why I said Logan Tom. Interesting. Misty May?
We have to put a lot more thought into this.
Yeah.
And definitely get Gardhoff to put it.
Make some dolls to it.
You don't think Gardhoff has already started? He's got a sketchboard out right now. And he's got a whole bunch of names on the whiteboard, and he's got all kinds of Star Wars names, and he's just matching.
He's crafting a lightsaber out of duct tape right now. Hey, you had an interesting question on here, Geeter, I thought that we should bring up and talk about.
Yep. Russ Rose's job. I'm sorry. I just saw that on my message board.
Oh, man. That's awful. If Hugh takes the Minnesota job, like McHaley after the 2000 games.
And remember, Mick was hired 2 years prior. Jared Elliott was the interim head coach for 2 years. So if Hugh took it today, Minnesota job, I will be there after London.
That wouldn't that be interesting? Yeah.
That would be interesting. What would that do to the volleyball
for
world?
2 years, and then we're going to have you.
Who takes over
it
the...
It makes sense. Wiz is from there. Wiz Bachman, his wife. Played at UCLA, but she's from Minnesota. She's from Minneapolis.
Would they ever leave? Do they want to leave SoCal? I mean, I don't know. You asked him, he gave you nothing.
Nothing. Sort of a Sort of a non-answer from what I remember. Certainly wasn't a yes.
Who would take over the women's national team? Who's the next?
Ooh.
Jimmy Mack? Jim McLaughlin up at Washington? Who?
It's a tough thing.
They like to keep it in the USA family, don't they?
Well, it's not only that. I think it's when people are in college, you look at a Cooker, a McLaughlin, or a Mick Haley, it's hard to pull them out of those positions.
Yeah. They're so dialed in, yeah.
They've got it wired. They have to hire assistants. They've got the program set up.
Making more money.
Make good money. They don't travel a ton. It's all domestic. The international job is a tough
job.
Man, you are traveling constantly. You are working like a dog. I think that's the biggest problem.
Is there a female candidate? Because we just said male candidates.
Really, if this sport were bigger, that job should pay $500,000 or $750,000. The national team job.
So how much they travel and what they have to put into it? Absolutely.
That's what it ought to pay, but it doesn't. It doesn't pay as well as most of the women's jobs. The high-profile ones, when you're talking about those same people in that realm.
Reed, do you think Hugh is intrigued by the college game and would take a job?
I don't think he would do it before this quad.
I don't think he's leaving before 12, but he may try and line some up for after 12.
I mean, isn't that one of the reasons why he probably made the move, to give himself more options in the future, to have that as a possibility?
Absolutely.
I think it's out there. What do you guys think, though, is more difficult? Obviously, at the college game, recruiting is huge, but at the international game, recruiting is less important and it's more about scouting. What do you guys think is harder?
It's not recruiting. It is scouting. You're right. And I think that part of it, for a long time, just got lost. You didn't see the national team coaches out as much as you'd like to. I think Hugh's changed that a bit. I think with the staffing they have now, they have an opportunity to have people out a little bit more. But I think you're right about he made that switch to open up the possibility for a greater career, because he doesn't want to have this lifestyle forever. I mean, he's got one child. Don't know if he wants more, but maybe. And you start to want to be home more, and especially in the summertime when they're traveling, you look at a tournament like Grand Prix, that's 5 weeks away.
Yeah.
Just gone.
And he gets the gold. They win the gold in 2008. They've improved tremendously here in this quad. If they do well in 2012, he can ride his own ticket no matter what.
Yeah.
He'll have his pick of the jobs. And he now has the 4 years of international women's experience.
If your job is open, it would be hard not to hire him. Maybe it's a situation where you force a coach out because you want to have Hugh. He may just say, I'd like this job. And you, the right athletic director, just push out whoever's there. Bring Hugh in.
Yeah. And Reed, you know, when it comes to the college game, man, it is about recruiting. You know, on your staff, you have to be able to recruit and get those athletes. Because if you have the athletes like a Russ Rose, like a Jared Elliott, you're going to be in the mix every single year. Then you have to have great assistants with you, one that has the arm and can train. You got to have a female or a male, depending on what gender the head coach is. You have to have a nice mix, and all the best programs do.
Yeah, and that's what's so tough about the international game, because it's so opposite from that. It's less about recruiting, obviously, and more about what are other teams doing and how do you get one up, you know? How do you figure out what other teams are doing internationally, because it's so different from the American game.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Brian Hostelt is leaving the University of Texas, so there's an assistant job open. You know, Jarrett's the head coach, a male. He's got Salima, who's a phenomenal assistant coach. So what does he need now? Probably a male and that second assistant. Who are the great ones out there? 347-677-1525. Give us a call, Jeremy.
Maybe somebody who's won a juniors national championship could fill that position.
Just not ready.
And maybe
you're talking about me?
Maybe
you're looking right at me.
Maybe get involved with the broadcasting and just be a triple threat down there.
Yeah, I've talked to Jared about it, getting back into college coaching, but I just, till this TV thing is over, I don't see me going down that road.
It's so time consuming, coach.
TV/radio.
Podcast.
Radio.
Broadcast.
Thank you, Reed. Appreciate that. Because I am now on the show permanently.
Booyah.
You wouldn't know it by the website or the intro show.
Hey, wait a second. We did a photo shoot, and you were in the mix.
And yeah, and we actually, somehow Dan is not in the photos anymore, and I love that about that.
Fine work by Josh Glazberg.
Photoshop. Can we get some more hair for me? I mean, if we could take Dan completely out, can we add some hair?
I'm going to bring a spray can next photo shoot just for you.
If you could have half.
Why don't you just bring the right clothes next time, Barney?
Nah. Hey, talking about Hugh McCutchen, the job he's doing, his women in the newest world rankings, still at number 2 in the world. So he's getting it done. I think they're going to look forward to another big season. One of the interesting things we talked about before is, what about the expectations now? This past year, expectations not so high. They delivered. They exceeded. Won Grand Prix, had a good performance at World Championships. Now this next year.
Have you asked Hugh about those expectations? I would guess that they like those expectations.
I don't think it
bothers
him.
Their expectations are medals.
It doesn't bother him. I think it's a concern for the players.
Gotcha.
And how well the players maintain. You have some players in there who've had a lot of success. They came in, now they've had some success here, but I don't think that their success at the international level is really going to be sustained if they stay at the same spot they're at now. And they need to know that. You know, a player coming from Penn State, come in, 4 national championships, 3 national championships, step into the national team, win Grand Prix. Yay, great, we're just killing it. You got to make sure that inner fire is still there, and it's going to be an interesting situation to manage.
You make a great point. You got to realize that to be successful in 2012, you got to keep building on what you've done now. There's no question about it.
Because the teams will be a lot better in 2 years. Those teams will be much better in 2 years. So the USA women stand at number 2, and the USA men now have fallen to number 5. In the world. I know that's not what Reed wants to hear. But
you know, I'm on my second 7-7, and I was feeling good. And you just got to go and do that.
Well, the truth hurts. You were at number 3. Now you're down to number 5, falling behind number 1, Brazil, number 2, Russia, number 3, Serbia. And now this is the big battle, number 4, Cuba.
Cuba,
who is in the USA zone going into this qualification year. Not good to have 2 of the top 5 teams in the same zone, because only one of them can win, and then the other one has to figure out a way to get into the Olympics.
You know, I've been real disappointed, obviously. I've been vocal about it on the show, and like I said, a lot of us that were around in 08 were poised and ready to try to rival the run that Brazil has put up for, well, I don't know, 6-8 years. It's phenomenal what they've done. They've set the bar so high, and it's been frustrating not to be able to match that. But you know, stepping back and just trying to assess it, you know, being 3,000 or 6,000 miles away, it's, you know, we're really only 2 matches away from being right where we want to be. Our loss to Cuba 2 summers ago to get to the World Cup, and then, of course, our loss to Italy. I think we like playing Italy 9 out of 10 times. We happen to not have a great match, not happen to have the best tournament, but, you know, it's not all, I don't know, what's the opposite of rainbow and ponies?
It certainly is not rainbows and ponies, but it's not time to jump on the panic button either. I think you guys definitely have some issues. World Championship showed that. You go 3-2 with Mexico. You have trouble with the Czech Republic. You have trouble with some team from Africa that I can't even remember offhand. You're a couple of matches away, but I think the performances need to be better, and I expect this year to be better. I expect the young outside hitters to come back better, both Rooney and Anderson. Thank you. Jeez.
Big Kim. We're definitely deeper in the setting position now after this past weekend.
Yeah. We know, there you go.
That's interesting.
No quicker way to get better than take your best outside hitter and turn him into a setter.
Anybody call in yet? Something out there. Reed? No one's talking to Reed yet?
No way.
I've been talking to a lot of people. We got a ton of people in the queue with their little hand up.
They're ready to go.
We do?
They're pre-planned.
Okay.
They're ready to go.
Little hand up. Thank you.
Because each week, the American Volleyball Coaches Association and the Net Live are proud to present the College Volleyball Weekly, a report on what has happened around the world of college volleyball.
Does this song bother Jay?
He's not happy.
And Sondi. And Robbie.
Sondi's the most bothered.
You got to be number one in the country.
Okay.
You play your song. I don't think Northridge has a song. I don't remember one. I spent 16 years in college.
This is a Budweiser theme?
Ah, you know it.
Maybe something like that?
With the Clydesdales marching down the road?
I always loved that as a kid. Loved seeing that around football time, the Clydesdales at Christmas. I'm not sure why this is still going. We're really giving them some pub here. All right, the College Volleyball Weekly about to get underway here. We have our correspondents back again. We have Rob Espiro. Bring him up right now. We have Rob, we have Jay, and we have Mike. And so, Mike, I want to start with you, and I want to ask you about this past week and what caught your eye.
I think the big thing that caught my eye is how good Stanford's going to be later in the year. I mean, I go back to the BYU win when they were down and won, and then after getting crushed the first night in Hawaii, they were to come back last night and win 17-50 in the fifth. And to win the MPSF regular season, you have to control yourself at home and win some big ones on the road. And after 2 weeks, I think it's down to three teams. USC, I think, is there. I think Stanford's there. And then potentially BYU. And I think everybody else is going to be playing for fourth right now.
Robbie, are you shocked that Pepperdine has had such a slow start in the MPSF?
Oh, yeah. They're at the bottom of the MPSF, and it's kind of odd seeing them in the cellar there behind Pacific. I mean, I know how you feel, Barney, but, man, they are definitely not an 0-3 team.
It seemed like this was a year where Marv really needs to earn his money. He's lost quite a bit of his offense and most of the team over the last two seasons, and here's where he needs to coach him up and get him better throughout the year.
Well, you know, they definitely have the pin attackers. You know, Maurice Torres has been so big for them, and he's a monster at the right side. Is he Murphy Troy level yet? Not quite yet, but he's definitely got the potential to be there. And Chase Ross definitely has his moments where he can be a dominant outside hitter. So, you know, I thought their weakness would have been their libero, their freshman, their true freshman, McMahon. But, you know, he's been playing really well. He's been passing some good balls and playing some good D. But, you know, I think what it comes down to is Pep's not able to close at the end of matches.
Yeah, I mean, Pepperdine, this is Mike again. Pepperdine, I think, is definitely a team that's still a contender. And I think the big thing is when you have to look at the MPSF, last year there were over 50 matches that went to five sets. It's the same way this year. And Pepperdine, those losses are in five sets. And with a couple of young players, you get better as the season goes on. Pepperdine having a veteran setter is like the best thing. Casey Kreider is really, really good. I think Pepperdine's big test is they come in and they've really handled UCLA the last few years in Pauley Pavilion. If they can win Wednesday, I think that's going to put them, you know, back on track. And with the same token, UCLA lost in five at Long Beach, again, another five-gamer. The Bruins are going to have to win on Wednesday against Pepperdine to set up that showdown with USC on Friday, or the Bruins are going to drop back in the pack.
Hey, Jay, before we get to the East Coast in the Midwest, talk about what it means for our sport and what you thought about when the NCAA announced that Division III would have a national championship for men's volleyball.
Actually, you know, it does a really, really good thing for our conference in the sense that, you know, a lot of people are not really high on the EIVA and think it's a real easy trip for us to get in every year, and because there are a few Division III teams in it. But, you know, being an ex-Division III coach at UC Santa Cruz for a number of years, I can tell you right now that we were fighting very hard to get that Division III championship. And, you know, when we looked at all the numbers, there were always close to 50 teams in the country. And, you know, now they're above it and they're hovering above that every year. And so they're getting their shot, and more power to them. And I think that this is the last year that there'll be any Division III teams in the EIVA. They actually go off and do their own thing next year. So our conference becomes a strictly Division I conference, which is real nice.
Now, Jay, we've heard a lot about, you know, USC and UC Irvine and UCLA. What about the teams from the Midwest and the East Coast? Who's going to be able to challenge, you know, in this early part of the year?
You know, I'm gonna say Ohio State's going to be a team to look at very closely. They've got pretty much their whole starting squad coming back this year, and the setter was I forget his name off the top
Steve
of my
Keenum.
Head, but his sister was the setter at Stanford for a number of years. He does a real nice job running that offense, and they've got some real nice pin hitters. Sangre is one of them that does a nice job, and you know they're going to be a team that you're going to look at on paper and go, well, you know, they didn't really do much maybe the previous year or the year before, but they have just improved week after week, and this year they're coming in there with this attitude of, you know, this is our chance and this is our shot, and we're going to make it happen. And I would say Ohio State's a team to watch.
We just had Bill Ferguson on the program here, and Mike, talking about the USC program, what are the things that you like about what Fergie has done bringing you back to prominence?
Well, I think the bigger thing is that last year should have been USC's year to win the national championship. And instead of standing pat and saying what happened, he went out, got a couple new assistant coaches, picked up a better blocking coach in Jeff Nygaard, another good assistant to help run things. And they've come out playing really, really well. And also what I like is he started the Madison McKibben at the start of the year, and now he's got Tri Bourne back in there. And I think Tri Bourne is better chemistry-wise with the rest of the USC players. And they're playing really well right now. I think that they have a chance to really do well. And then, like I said, Stanford has really impressed me with the way you talk about Pepperdine not winning five. Stanford's had two amazing five-game wins. And then the Midwest and the East, I really think the next couple of weeks that you have Ohio State playing Penn State and Loyola of Chicago, which hasn't really played anybody, they're going to be playing Penn State. Right now, they're playing for the third and fourth seed right now, but a chance to see what happens. And then a couple of the West Coast teams are going back and playing in the Penn State tournament next week. That's going to be a big challenge to see really how far Penn State can go this year and whether Ohio
Ohio State, a couple of the other Midwest teams are really at that level. But I think for USC, they're there right now. Fergie has really done a great job having them, you know, really mentally be ready to play. And they've come out and they've played, you know, guns. They've been right there. You know, Steve Sandrick's done a really nice job in the middle replacing Hunter Current. And Murphy Troy and Tony Cirelli are not making the hitting errors that they were making last year.
Hey, guys, let's go around the horn. We'll start with you, Jay. Just some important matches, excuse me, guys, that you guys see coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Awesome. You know, I'll say for us, important matches coming up. UC Irvine and Northridge coming out in a couple of weeks. That's
right.
Going to be a real test to see where we stack up against some of the better teams or just some of the teams in general in the MPSF we watched this weekend. Anything can happen. Hawaii swept Stanford in three. Long Beach beat UCLA and stopped their streak. Pepperdine's 0-3. And, you know, Irvine, you know, finally won a five-gamer. So for us to be able to see where we stack up against those teams, I think that's going to be a big weekend for us.
Robbie?
You know, I think I'm going to be watching that USC-UCLA match. I'm sure Sonny's going to say the same, but some big implications there because, you know, Sonny referred to it. One of the things that I do see different about the USC team this year from the last 2 years is they've got this never-say-die attitude. They're throwing their bodies on the line for balls to keep rallies alive. And what I'm seeing more differently this year is even on if there is a broken play, which has been rare with their passing between Cirelli and Cassidy, they've been able to stay in system. But when there is a broken play, you know, they've got this high ball attack that, you know, Cirelli's just swinging away. They're all gunning away like they got nothing to lose. So they've been playing really well. I think the other match that I'd watch oddly enough, will be the Stanford Long Beach State. Stanford, you know, they're at number two right now, but Long Beach State has got a hot hand, and I'd be curious to see how the senior setter Mike Klipsch is able to get his team to pump up at that match. He's got his outsides working. You know, they put in a freshman outside against UCLA, Crab, and he did really well. And you know, Boffman has been pretty much a tough person to stop at the right side, and Aguilar is just blocking well at the net. So I think that's going to be a five-set match right there, the Stanford-Long Beach State match.
Mike, if you're voting with your feet, who are you going to see?
UCLA Pepperdine on Wednesday. I think it's a crucial match for Pepperdine to win on the road, and UCLA changes lineup again. They had a lineup against Northridge on Wednesday, changed it on Friday, and it'll be interesting to see the way UCLA comes out. UCLA's been having trouble with the opposite position to see if they can get that solved, but for UCLA playing at home, it's a must-win if they want to stay in the race, and for Pepperdine, it's a win for confidence because they should match up real well with UCLA with their power.
All right, gentlemen, thank you all. The new poll comes out later today from the AVCA. We appreciate your information. Look forward to talking to you all next week.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Later, all guys. Right. See you, fellas.
Bye.
All right, that's our College Volleyball Weekly, sponsored by the AVCA.
We're doing what we can to get the men's game going, Barney.
Hey, we got the correspondents.
Get the fan support.
We wanted guys that knew what they're talking about. Those are them.
Yeah, Jeremy.
Jeremy just chilling on the couch, got the cat in the sun.
J-Ro, by the looks of that picture in Volleyball Magazine, could you have played high-level Division I men's volleyball?
Without a doubt.
Libero?
No formal training at all whatsoever, but I have skills.
I'm pegging you for a D3 championship. You could have won that. Could have gone. Could have been a contender.
Would have put people in the seats, too.
Hey, more to come.
For sure.
Talk about a double threat. Spin the tunes, crush the ball. More to come here on the Volleyball Network. The Net Live, we have Mark Swindell, owner of University Athlete. Also, people hating on Geeter.
I can't wait. Shocking.
Email crushing you, giving you a Razzie, effectively, a Razzie Award.
I don't even know what the Razzie means.
It's the Anti-Academy Award.
Oh.
You got a netty for worst performance. That's what it was.
I cannot wait. We're not waiting to the end of the show for this. It's coming up right after the break.
The Net Live. Be back in just a minute.
Watch.
Welcome back in. Geeter clearing his throat, getting ready. You got that frog out of there, man? Trying, buddy. DJ Rosé spinning it. Hey, big thanks to Cam Kerr there on the message board. Geeter, you're now on the headline there for our site.
Can you show it to me?
Look at it. You got it. It's half of it. Look at the top banner ad.
Oh.
It's you giving the shout-out right over my shoulder, my... Our top banner on our site.
I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. You need that, don't you?
Yeah, Cam Kerr doing some real work, finally, on the show.
Finally, somebody in your corner.
It's amazing.
Hey, if you have a question for Mark Swindle coming up at University Athlete, 347-677-1525. Or maybe you just want to talk to Reed. I don't know. You might just want to call in and speak to Reed. Ask him what he's drinking. Ask him how he's doing.
Let's get to this email,
if the baby's okay.
Beating around the bush.
We're getting the email pretty soon, but first we have a caller who we've had on the show before, a couple of weeks ago. And now he's gone somewhere else in the world.
From Nicaragua.
He's in fraud. He's back to Nicaragua. Live. Driving down the dirt road there.
Am I on?
Am I on?
Yeah.
You know, I'm picturing driving down a road like Romancing the Stone or something with a just a truck full of birds.
Oh, that's fantastic. Chip Kelly, tell us what is going on. You killed it last time on the net live. What a positive check.
Well, yeah, I loved hearing that. That's great. I actually went back and listened to it the other day, and it was fun. You know, it was good. And I think it's great that people are getting that info. I got a lot of feedback from people, too, which I think is amazing because it just shows, you know, how much love you guys are getting and how many people are tuning in. And I was actually really pleasantly surprised at how many people commented that had obviously been listened to it live. You know, I thought most people were just downloading the podcast. But I think you got more people tuning in than I had thought, at least.
That's good news. Now, what's going on with Bring It right now? Bring It Promotions,
well,
with the next tour, what do you guys have?
No, we're just kind of kicking it now. We're trying to finish up all the placements that happened on tour, get all the transfers done for the girls that are down in Puerto Rico. I'm actually down in Nicaragua, moving on to some other stuff. We run a music festival down here now that has nothing to do with volleyball, but so I'm taking a little bit of a break. But I tuned in, like I was telling you, I tuned in last week and thought it was great listening to Jordan Larson talking about some of the problems that she was having over there. And, you know, I think the great lesson in that is that you're talking about one of our top players in a top club making big money, and if she's still having problems with electricity and her car and, you know, the bed and all the things that she was talking about, I think that really lets you know how it is. You know, if a girl making that kind of money is still having all these same little problems, it's a great lesson for everybody about what to expect when they get over there.
TK, since you came on a couple weeks ago, I've had some people in the volleyball world, recent young athletes that have just finished their career, some great setters and outside hitters, you know, wanting to know more about how to contact you and how to get on a tour. What's the latest with that?
Well, our website is just bringitusa.com. If you Google search Bring It Promotions or professional volleyball in Europe or anything, we'll pop up. We've been doing it so long, we somehow got really good organic ratings with Google. They can call me, Skype me, anything. I mean, we're pretty easy to get a hold of.
And when's the next tour?
I lost you on that one.
Well, number one, before I get into the next tour, are you running or driving on the freeway?
I'm actually walking across the freeway because my driver didn't come pick me up at the airport, and I saw him across the street, so I'm about to sprint across the Pan American Highway. There we go. I just did it.
Okay. Well, be careful. When is the next tour? When is the next tour for you, and where will you be going?
Well,
for
an exposure tour where we're getting girls jobs, we won't do that again until August. And we run a men's and a women's exposure tour at the same time. We kind of run them concurrently but in different cities because that would be a little bit dangerous having them together. And so between now and then, we're just running club tours and university tours, stuff like that, that start up in the spring.
Someone just said on the message board, cue the Fogger music. I did picture him just dodging cars.
I hear and the moped in the background. That was great. Helicopter going. I mean, you see a giant Pan American running across the Pan American Highway. You figure something's up.
Yeah, for those of you who don't
know,
he's 6'10". He's 6'10", and I'm not sure if he has a grit dog in his mouth, but he is sprinting across the street.
It's all good now. We're in the truck, so we're rolling. Hey, one other thing, if I can jump in. This is what I wanted to talk about last time we were chatting, and Jordan, again, commented on Puerto Rico. And I wanted to say a couple things. I promised one of the owners down there that I would do this. We've run into a little bit of trouble the last year or two where a lot of the top girls graduating have been told by people that the Puerto Rican League is a you know, not a great league, and that it's actually going to hurt them and be a step backwards, and that they really need to get over to Europe. And while I agree that Europe, you know, the top leagues in Europe have a better level and the girls are going to get better training, Puerto Rico is the ultimate transition league, I think. And to go, you know, we've already touched on so many of these subjects, but to go from an NCAA organization where you're so well cared for and you're at home and everything's great, Puerto Rico is such a nice step where it is a little bit different and you have to adapt to some stuff, but they know how to treat Americans. There's Americans on every team. And, you know, you can use your same cell phone. The time zone's the same. And it ends up being such a great way for somebody right out of college to go and have a little bit, you know, it's a little bit more stress than college because they want you to score. And if you don't, they'll fire you. But it's not as high stress as Europe. And there's so many of the comforts at home that it's just a great place for people to play. And I just want to get that out there and get people chatting about it.
You know, it is. I think Crystal Morrison played over in Puerto Rico and really liked it.
Yeah, most of the girls really like it, and, you know, some of them party a little too much, and they're having maybe too much fun and going to the beach too much, and obviously the owners don't like that, and they're going to fire you if they don't think you're giving it your all, but nobody doesn't like it. You know, most of the people speak English. It's a really fun league. There's not a lot of training, and they play two or three times a week instead of once a week like in Europe, so, when you've graduated from college, you know, you just put in 4 years of pretty hard training and a regimented life. I think it's an awesome place to go. For the girls that are finished with school in December, to be able to go down there in January, you know, you take a week off for Christmas and New Year's, then go down there and make, you know, anywhere from 15 to 60 or 80,000 bucks for 3 or 4 months, and it's the money's so much safer and the whole situation is so much cleaner than trying to, you know, get into Azerbaijan or Russia or Brazil as a rookie. And I just wish that some of the really top kids would consider it as more of a viable option for their first year. And you look at players like Jordan; she went down there for her first year. Made a bunch of money, and she still was able to go right into Russia and make a ton more money. So obviously Puerto Rico is not a step backwards in that case. It's a nice transition from college to the pro world.
It's about getting out there and getting the competition, and like you're talking about, DK, get used to being responsible as a professional athlete, not just a scholarship athlete. What about the pay situation down there? That meant there are all kinds of problems in Europe about getting paid. I've never heard you think that about Puerto Rico, and it seems like you could have more sway in the courts because it is so close to the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Latin country, and some of the stuff they do is a little bit slow. You know, we have all the jokes about mañana. But honestly, every player we've had down there for the last 3 or 4 years was paid in full by the time the season was finished. And in one or two cases where it wasn't, we were all over them, and it was paid within a couple weeks. And I mean, you don't have these situations where girls are 2 or 3 months behind on payments and people are blowing them off and ignoring them. It's, you know, it's pretty steady. Most of the people are getting paid every 2 weeks instead of once a month, so that's nice. You've kind of got a good flow going all the time. And it's such a great place to live and spend 3 or 4 months.
Talk about a great place to live. How's Nicaragua, bud?
Oh, it's phenomenal. I'm so happy to be back home. You got to get down here.
Yeah, can we get the Net Live doing a show in Nicaragua? We're all about traveling this year. I don't know if you've been listening to the shows, but the Net Live's thinking about going mobile here in 2011.
Well, we need to make it happen then. We got a team coming down here in March. We could set something up where you come down. We can ride to the game in an ox cart, you know, watch the game, do a little Net Live broadcast, and then go do a little surfing with a rum and coke. It's all good.
And then run across the freeway.
Yeah, we don't usually do that. That was a little special just for you guys.
Just remember, if someone offers you a ride in their little mule. Desert.
All right, well, hey, I have a feeling I'm going to start having bad service as we cut out of the city. So I'm going to thank you guys for having me on and sign off here.
Beautiful. Thanks, yeah, hey, and keep checking in because there's a lot of kids out there that really get interested.
Okay, you know, I'll log on to onto your Facebook page and put a little holler, you know, put a little info on there about how they can get a hold of us.
Awesome. Thanks, DK.
Does that work out? All right. All right, thanks, guys. Have a good show.
All right. I hope he takes a good day.
My goodness.
Interesting stuff about the Puerto Rican League.
Yeah, I've always heard good things. And I got a call this week from a coaching friend that was asking me about the Puerto Rican League and if it was a good choice, a good option for people. I said, that's all I've ever heard is that it's good. I think of Sarah Noriega, another player that went down there off the national team and played there for a little while. And people have gone there on rehab assignments. People have gone there to play consistently and bridge the gap between being on the national team and being a professional, or being in college and being a professional. I've always heard good stuff. And it is sort of the easy, the soft overseas. I mean, yeah, it's a Latin country, and yeah, there are differences, but you have American television, which is a big deal just to feel like you're still part of home. You have, like we're talking
American
about,
dollar.
American
is used.
Yeah.
Cell phone service.
A
same
bit more
time
recourse.
Zone.
Yeah, a bit more understanding of who you are and how things are normally functioning in your country, in America. I think that gets lost in Europe.
Interesting, you know, what I love about TK is the honesty. Always, you know, it's not always, what does Hugh say? Kittens and candles?
Rainbows and ponies.
Rainbow ponies.
Electricity. So I like kittens and candles.
Kittens and candles is one of my favorites. But I love that he said, hey, sometimes the girls go over there and they party too hard and go to the beach all day. And you get fired. I mean, it's a great lesson to learn, and I think a lot of these young athletes end up going over, learn how to become responsible, learn how to live on your own, learn to see a different culture, invaluable experience, I think, playing overseas.
I think Ryan Millar played like 4 or 5 days of golf when he was playing down there.
That sounds fantastic, actually. I'm in.
Yeah, they have like 3 or 4 matches a week, so there's like no practices. I hear great things about the Puerto Rican League.
Hey, that's the best right there, because nobody likes to just grind it out and practice. When you're overseas in Europe, and sometimes they take 2-week breaks, or you're playing, there's 7 days between championship games. Like, really? Can we grind this out in about 4 days, and can I go? You know, let's enough with the practice and the brouhaha and the scouting reports. Let's just play some volleyball. And it's fun as a player to play.
Agree.
Fun to practice and to prep all the time. It's an important part of being a professional, but the reason you play is to play the game,
and
Herm Edwards.
You know what people cannot see because we're on radio is you were just looking at me like you were lecturing me right there. For some reason, you were coming at me right there.
There's been a lot of people getting after you lately.
Let's get to this damn email. Reed, why are you laughing in Russia so hard?
I love it. I love it.
Send this email.
Here, the title was "The Netty for Worst Moment in an Interview with a Gold Medalist" goes to Geekcrest.
Oh, he called me Geekcrest.
Geekcrest, yeah. This is from Garrett G. He even shares a name with you, or maybe it's Gee. I don't know. G-E-E.
Garrett G. Okay.
Okay. It says
what gold medalist is this?
It says, really? Say hi to your former DJ. I don't know. I imagine you guys were probably trying to figure out which direction to take the interview with Kent, but you didn't have any other questions ready.
I didn't
like
say
Todd.
Anything to Kent. About the former DJ. Well,
you got to listen to this first.
Okay, sorry.
I think it was just say hi to DJ Roche. We're trying to give him a little shout out, but you're wrapped up in you right now. I understand.
Yeah, selfish.
So it's like Todd. How'd the competition between the girls and the guys in your home court, something like that?
Huh?
Geekcrest, love the value you've added since you've joined the show. But that Tuesday morning, when you looked at yourself in the mirror, before you put on your UGG boots, did you ask yourself,
dude, I am going to fight this guy
100%. What will you do if there's any off pause and you're trying to figure out which question to ask Todd Rogers next?
I'm confused about the girls and the guys thing. Can someone explain to me what's happening here?
I'm going to have to go back and listen again.
I'm going to have to go back.
I'm confused, too, because there was an awkward pause in the Kent interview, but not in the – I don't remember one in the Todd interview.
The awkward pause in the Kent interview, by the way, was because Kent stopped talking, and we were looking at each other with the mute button on, saying where we were going to go with the direction of the interview. With Todd Rogers, I'm looking at Jay Roche and his handsome face and his tattoos and his hair, and Todd Rogers doesn't know Jay Roche is now part of the show, and he only talked to him once in 7 years on the stage. So I said, Todd Rogers, say hi to your DJ, Jay Roche. It wasn't a stalling thing. It was more of a recognize home slice that Jay Roche is in the house.
I think
and I don't own UGG boots, and I will fight anyone that says I do. I had some slippers that I wore this show.
You put on your
UGG
ASICs
slippers
for today. That's good.
But I'm not wearing any UGG boots around town on like a bike. Yeah. You guys have lost your mind.
I think you're focused on the wrong part of this, because when he's going on you on that Tuesday morning when you look at yourself in the mirror,
yeah,
you know, that's where it's at for me. And you slipped on your UGG boots.
Was that the day? That was last week. I wasn't wearing UGG boots that day. I don't have UGG boots.
Boy, you are really
rough. When I look in the mirror.
Oh, man.
When I looked in the mirror that day, you know what I said? You are awesome.
You are good enough.
And these are not UGG boots.
And these, yeah. I mean, I know when I wake up and I look in that mirror that I'm pretty awesome.
You're in a glass case of emotion right now.
Yeah. Well, I just want some, you know, I don't know. Maybe our listeners can join in. I mean, I'm not sure.
Clarify.
But what about the guys and girls? What was? Can you go on with that again about the guys and girls in home court competition?
I deleted it already.
Okay,
we're past it.
We've moved on.
You're gonna have to get over it. I mean, some people out there don't love you.
Barney's just pumped that like
Yeah.
Somebody else has bad email, not just him.
Well, it looks like he's looking like a – yeah. And all of a sudden he wants to move on. He looks like someone pissed in his cornflakes. He's like got his head down. He's all mopey. He's like, it's not just you, man. Not everyone loves you.
I like when Geeter gets fired up. He gets.
It's good for the show.
See how he's deflecting it now? Yeah. Now he's attacking me. He's gone from defending himself to outright aggression towards other people on the mic.
His face is beet red.
I don't own Ugg boots, dude.
He slipped off his Ugg
slippers. You know what I'm mad about is Jay Roche saying out Twitter pictures and stuff and really.
You were wearing house slippers.
Thank you. Okay.
Your house.
I was wearing house slippers.
Because they're called house slippers. They're not supposed to go outside.
And he came in. He goes, can you make me some tea?
Yeah.
I feel very good. Sick. I need a blanket.
Unlike Jay Cutler, I played that day.
Oh, so you're bagging on him too?
I'm just saying.
Hey.
I showed up.
Hey, I got a broken collarbone. I'm still here. You can sub me in for the Bears.
Looks like you had a pinched nerve or something. You're really awkward in that chair.
I'm trying to get this dust off my icon here. I got Lego guys just show up on my desk here. It's like working after a hurricane sometimes with these kids. You come upstairs, there's Legos, there's drawings.
I think more people should heckle us on email and stuff because that gets this show really going.
TheNetLive@gmail.com, especially if you have something bad to say about Geeter.
TheNetLive@gmail.com.
Email us anytime. Call us, 347-677-1525 during the show and ask a question of someone we have on.
True story. Jay Roche knows this. There was a couple times where people would email the AVP completely abusing me.
Yes.
And they would forward them on to me because it was my friends that would look at the emails, and I would write the people back.
I like that.
Like this guy said, tell that Geeter guy to shut the F up, and I wrote back, why, sir? Why would you like me to shut? And then we just went on and the guy ended up apologizing, and I ended up giving him tickets at a venue. So, you know, you can just talk about it. It's okay to hate somebody, but let's talk about it. Let's have an open dialogue.
So if you want something, if you want Geeter to send you Oakleys to your mailbox, criticize him first.
Yeah.
He will respond, and then maybe you'll get something.
And then maybe we'll get something out of it.
And my favorite Geeter line,
Garrett,
by the way.
Whatever his name is. He's a good kid. I hope he emails again.
Garrett Gee.
He's
got to
be
Gee.
Right?
I don't care if it's Gee. He's got to be Gee.
Yeah, favorite Geeter line was Hermosa. I don't know. Maybe it was 2000. And there's this one guy. I know you know who I'm talking about. There's this one guy in the crowd. When everybody else is sitting down, this guy's standing up. And he's dancing. And he's got this smile on his face. And it's just weird. And entertaining at the same time. And I think you, over the loudspeaker, everyone's focus is on him. You're like, party for one, your table's ready.
I said, sir, party of one, your table's ready.
You the whole place died laughing. It was great. Oh, yeah, dude, come on.
Reed loves me like I love him.
It's classic.
It's awesome that you remember that. Thanks, Reed. Look at Kevin.
You guys
pissed
you
over
done
there.
Making.
Yeah, they pump you back up after they try to crush you.
What I remember about Barney is shut the door. One side out, shut the door. We used to have that in the intro.
Hold on.
What happened to that, by the way?
Is that a fan said that to you?
No, I said that on the air during 2008, during the Olympic Games.
That's what you said for the gold?
No.
Oh.
No, Sunderland was talking.
Okay. And you just kept saying, shut the door, one side out?
No, I said it at some point during, I don't know, late in a match.
Maybe it was like Russia, one side out, shut the door.
Maybe.
Awesome. By the way, the people—it always—it's my biggest pet peeve when people are like, you have like a 3 or 4 point lead, and the feedback in a timeout or a fan will say it. When a coach says it, I write them off right away. And when a player says it, it's like this guy doesn't know how to win. When they're saying all you need to do now is side out. How do you win? You can't win games with that kind of mentality. Oh, we've got a 3 point cushion. Now you just need to side out. Like you're going to side out to win. Everybody knows volleyball doesn't work that way. Am I alone on that?
Actually, if you just side out back and forth, it does work that way. But
that's not how the game works, though. That puts you in defensive mode. You're not, like, going out there. You're not being aggressive. You're just trying to say, like, oh, all we need to do is side out. Forget scoring real points.
Oh, so you're saying, okay.
Yeah, it's a mentality
just side out, you win.
The mentality shift he's talking about. Yeah.
What about this, Reed? Last year, up in a big match at JO's, and I believe we're up maybe 18 to 13, and we were kind of talking to the girls about this drill we do, 5-3. We got to side out 5 times. Before you get 3 real points, and we just kept talking about siding out because if we had just, you know, if we kept holding and siding out first ball,
you're not a good coach.
We're going to win that game. What do you think?
Reed just lost respect.
That's just what I want to know. I want to get better.
First the Uggs, now this.
I want to get better, and Reed can make me better right now.
Well, this is just my personal opinion, and I'm not a coach. I'm a player, but I think defense wins championships. Siding out keeps you in games, I think, and I think defense wins. And, I, you know, when you're trying to stop the other team, and you're, it's that mentality of I'm going to do whatever it takes to dig that ball or block that ball. I think it's just a different mentality. And side out, hopefully, is just kind of second nature. And whenever you have a team that struggles in side out, they're going to struggle to win. That's just my personal opinion, though.
Yeah, I also think, though, in the men's game at your level, siding out is, you know, like reading the paper. You just do it every day, boom. You know, in the women's game, I think if you can control your side-out game, you know you're going to score a couple points here and there. You're going to win. I mean, don't you guys just side out? What kind of clip do you guys side out at?
Oh, gosh. I don't even know. That's a Barney question.
If you're hitting well, analyst. Around 60, 70. If you're really hitting well out of a certain rotation, yeah. you want to have it up around 70. But, all right. It doesn't matter what level you're at. If you don't have the right athletes out there, you're never going to side out.
Great segue.
Our next gentleman.
Yes, nice job.
Is the owner of University Athlete, which is a tool that coaches all over the United States employ to find players
yep.
and organize their lives when they're at these giant tournaments like Vegas.
Getting a lot of run right now as well. And every coach I talk to is saying, in the last 10 years, this has been the biggest thing for us. I mean, University Athlete has changed the way these coaches can approach a tournament and recruit. It's been a phenomenal thing for them. It's been their best friend.
Took what was a giant pile of papers, several notebooks, lots of stuff all over the place, turned it into one palm pilot, an organized place to have it. This man is an assistant coach in his first year at Air Force there in Colorado Springs. He's under former national team assistant coach Matt McShane. He's from New Mexico, his alma mater. Mark Swindle, thank you so much for joining us here on the Net Live. Welcome.
You're welcome, guys.
Mark, tell us a little bit about what University Athlete is for our listeners who are not familiar.
I think most people are familiar with the club situation we have in the United States. We have an amazing – volleyball's amazing. We have these huge tournaments that are held all over the country, and you'll get 1,000 teams at one event, 1,000 teams playing on 100 courts. So I swear, with some of these tournaments, you can see the curve of the horizon and mist over court 100. You know, it's just crazy. So what our system does is we take the roster data, and we combine it with the team schedule so that coaches can either find kids that they're already recruiting, and they can build a list. So I walk in, I download the latest schedule to my BlackBerry or iPhone or Android or Palm Pilot or whatever, and it essentially tells me, go to this court at this time, go to this court at this time, go to this court at this time, because the kids that you want to see are on these courts. So then I can take notes. Evaluate them some more, take a note on them, cross them off the list because I don't want them anymore, find out they committed to UCLA or whatever, cross them off the list, whatever it is. The other thing that they can do is they can be standing on a court and go, who the hell is that kid? And type in court 14, see the two teams playing, tap on the team, look at the roster, find number 3 and go, oh, she's already signed. So I'll just write her off. Or, wow, she's, you know, that's a great sophomore there. I'm going to take a note on her, and we're going to invite her to camp or whatever's legal under NC2A rules.
So this is an organizational tool for coaches to allow them to be more efficient when they're at tournament.
It is, and then the other component is pretty much just as important, and that is that we have a web-based login that they use at their office, and we have about 110,000 kids in the database. And if a kid calls me or leaves me a voicemail and goes, hi, this is Susie Smith, and I want to play volleyball for you, and I live in Arkansas. Well, I don't know if I can call her back or not. She didn't leave her grad year, nothing. Or she sends me an email, same thing. I can search for her name online. Pretty much if they play club, they're in there. And I can realize that, oh, she's a 2013 grad year. I can't call her back. I can't send her an email. I can't do anything. I just got to let that one go. Or, okay, this is a 2011 kid, and I can call her back or I can send her an email. So online also we can record notes and contacts and just about everything attached to those kids. So it's sort of like a turnkey thing where the web keeps you organized in your office and lets you get ready to go to events. And then when you get to the event, the mobile, whatever you use for your phone, keeps you on track and able to take notes without carrying around a yellow pages size book for a roster and a white pages size book for schedule.
Mark, where are you guys now with the NCAA? There's been a lot of talk about the NCAA coming in and saying as a recruiting service so people can't use you. No coaches are up in arms. And can you just educate us and our listeners on what's been going on the last few weeks?
Yeah, there are rules that the NCAA made that are were specifically designed to handle basketball, which is a pretty nasty sport behind the scenes. And what was happening was the scouting and recruiting services were charging exorbitant fees to basketball coaches to enable them to get contact data on their players. And if they got that exorbitant fee, they would then not release that data to any other coaches. So all these rules came down, and it was just a basketball thing, and then, boom, all of a sudden it's the entire Division I manual. So somebody decided somewhere that we might be a recruiting service and that all of these rules apply to us. And because of that, one of the rules is that you have to evaluate the athletes. Well, we have 110,000 kids in our database. We don't evaluate any athletes. That's not what we do. We're a roster database. So we thought we had it worked out this summer so that we would, you know, not fall under the rules, and then they decided, no, there's this interpretation of the rule that says you still don't follow it. So what we then did was work with our American Volleyball Coaches Association rep, and he went to the NCAA, wrote a beautiful letter, made me cry, talking about what it is that we do, and we are asking for a waiver for our sport for this year so we can get it all worked out. There's a conference call on that waiver, probably going on at the same time I'm doing this, and he expects the waiver to be passed. No one thinks we're a recruiting or scouting service. Unfortunately, there's no definition of one. They won't give one. But no one in their right minds thinks that what we do has anything to do with promoting athletes or selling our evaluation of those athletes to coaches.
How does this affect the Vegas tournament, Mark?
We should be fine, I would guess, today. There is a rule, and most of the compliance officers have already allowed that you can use our service at the events. The question is, can I look up a kid that didn't attend an event that I went to? Because if this kid from Arkansas calls me and leaves me a voicemail, I don't know if she was at an event I went to or not. So right now what they're saying is you can't look for her online unless you know that she went to an event that you went to. And so that's kind of the final sticking point for where it just doesn't make sense. It's goofy. I mean, USA Swimming can't sell their list of butterfly times for $50 to college coaches right now because it doesn't contain evaluations.
Okay, so Mark, yeah, give us some clarification on that. You mentioned you're a roster database, and you're talking about some of the stats from other sports. What's the difference between a roster database and a recruiting service as the NCAA is looking?
Well, I can't give you their definition because they won't give me one, but essentially a recruiting service tends to get paid by the kids to promote that athlete. So you pay me, I don't know, $1,000 or $500 or whatever it is. I'll send faxes or emails for you. I will build you a skills video. I will give you advice on how to get scholarships, and then I will promote you. A scouting service typically is someone who is paid by the colleges to go out and watch all the kids in their area, and this is very prevalent in basketball. And so I pay a yearly fee to them, and they go tell me who's good. Because, see, volleyball doesn't even apply because all the good kids, 99% of the good kids play club when they're at these huge events. Every college coach can go see them. But in basketball, I mean, you know, basketball is, this kid might just play, you know, high school only or might play on a little club team, but their tournaments are so small compared to volleyball's that you can't get everywhere. So you pay a scouting service to let you know what kind of talent's available in that area. We don't do any of that.
What was the NCAA telling you that you had to provide if they did define you as a recruiting service? You had to have write-ups on every single kid that was in your database?
Right. 110,000 of them. Yeah.
Huh.
The NCAA, as much as it is fun to pick on them and say stuff about them, they are intelligent people trying to keep the sport as clean as possible. Volleyball is really clean anyway. So, you know, when something weird happens in volleyball, it's big news. They don't even understand how advanced we are. They can't even what they expect is coaches stand in line at an event and pay their $300 or whatever, and they get handed a paper packet. That, in their mind, is what goes on in every sport. Whereas in volleyball, we used to do, you know, 300 packets at an event. Now we do 5 or 6, and we usually end up throwing 3 of them away, printed packets. Nobody wants them. They're worthless before they're printed because kids' uniform numbers changed. And our database updates, you know, as the roster updates.
Well, tell us more about your business and how it came about.
Okay. This tour. All right. It came about from me being a club coach. I coached club for 20-some years. And 1 year, I remember at Crossroads, they got the grad years wrong on two of my outside hitters in the book. I ended up wearing a white T-shirt where I used a Sharpie to write on my shirt, you know, number so-and-so and so-and-so are, you know, class of 1997 or whatever it was. And at that point, I had a lot of friends in college. Matt McShane, who I now work for, is one of my best friends. And sitting in a hot tub drinking a Coors Light, or maybe it was tequila, yeah. I don't remember. He's bitching about having to carry all these books around to recruit and how it was almost impossible to find kids and you can only look at a certain number a day. And I'm going, and I'm kind of a geek, and I'm going, you know, I think we could put that on a Palm Pilot. So I found a Palm developer, sort of. I mean, he sort of knew what he was doing. And in Vegas, this is when we released it, we emailed every college coach in the country and said, hey, beg, borrow, or steal a Palm Pilot, show up to Vegas, and we're going to give you this free software that's going to let you track kids and make it easier for you to do work. And by the first night in Vegas, every department store, electronics store in Vegas had sold out of Palm Pilots. And they coaches were just shredding our software. They were inputting way more than we thought they would. They were beating the hell out of it, but they loved it. I mean, it was, we knew right then we had a hit. So
Mark,
that was 6 or 7 years ago.
I remember when that happened because I was coaching club in Vegas, and it was
okay.
Like the greatest Christmas of all time for these coaches. It was,
oh, yeah.
It was literally, guys, a game changer, without a doubt.
I think, you know, it's leveled the playing field. The tournament's already made recruiting national, but now coaches have access to these kids easier. But it's just saved time. I mean, it's, you would have to go 4 or 5 hours of looking up kids in the book, figuring out what their team code was, going to the schedule, finding when they play, and then you have to write all that down on a piece of paper, and then you have to sort it by time and court so that you could, you know, you're looking at the right kids. And, you know, before Tour of Texas was this weekend, I just talked to a coach. You know, before you could see 10, 15 kids, 20 kids, in a 24-hour period, he saw 103. He took notes on 103 kids, and he took even more off his list. So it is kind of a game changer. It really saves coaches a ton of time when they're recruiting, and it really lets us reach out to all corners of the country and either recruit or decline to recruit kids, but at least we know they're there.
Mark Swindle is the owner of University Athlete and in his first year as an assistant coach at Air Force in Colorado Springs. Mark, thank you so much for providing information.
You're welcome, guys.
To hearing more
great
about
job.
Your resolution with the NCAA.
Good luck to you guys, too. Have a great year.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. Interesting stuff there from Mark Swindle. Tell you what, it's kind of funny to me, the NCAA outlawing something they don't have a definition for.
Just outlaw.
Yeah, don't be this.
Outlaw first.
Don't be this.
Then we'll talk about it.
Yeah. Hey, Mark, he makes a good point about the NCAA. They are navigating a very difficult
no doubt
road with all the money, all the influence, all the different pushes and pulls inside of their different sports. They are navigating a very tough situation. But at times, it seems like they want to simplify things that they are doing by simply making a blanket rule that makes no sense for a lot of what is happening, and hopefully they get that straightened out. And so many times volleyball ends up in the clutches of football and basketball.
That was the nicest you've ever been to the NCAA. That should go on your reel.
That should be, yeah. Yeah. I love you guys. Hire me.
Right, Reed?
Yeah, good call. What happened throughout the week, Barney? Did you did somebody hit you up? Your job opportunity for the NCAA, now you got to be nice?
No way. No.
That's not your MO. I know. Sorry.
No, that will not. Maybe.
Barney and I will be moving to Austin, Texas for the Texas Network. We just have not announced it officially yet.
Thank you, Jared. I want to thank him in advance.
Thank
for
you, Jared Elliott. Probably listening
there.
Out there. Albert Hammond's coming on next week. What else do we have coming up?
I got Brandon Rosenthal right now.
Rosenthal.
Our executive producer.
What's up, guys?
What do you have to contribute other than the contact of Mark Swindle, which you mentioned earlier?
Nice work, by the way, Brandon.
Hey, I'm trying to bring you guys up to date. No, I will say that I do believe Barnett's a little jealous of Reed's comic book-esque ad right here.
Did you hear how excited you got when I had hate mail, that one hate mail, the history of my career?
Yeah. You know, you just got to let it go.
When your next player who can't... And we're going to have to bang on you and Marie.
You're going to come out on Twitter like guys did, like Jones Drew did about Cutler today, just Barnett just crushing me on Twitter.
As soon as Reed has a bad game, I'm all over him all summer.
Where were you the last? Where were you the last 2 months, man? I was in the tank, trying to fish myself out.
I was writing it all in Russian. That stuff doesn't make it on the net live.
Really?
Hey, I will follow up Swindle's little interview there. I know, some guys like to work on just pen and paper, but let me tell you, I came into the game, coaching wise, right when University Athlete came, so I really don't know what pen and paper is all about as far as recruiting goes. But, man, let me tell you, it has been a game changer. It continues to be a game changer. And, I know just speaking with other coaches right now, the thought of University Athlete going away is just, it's like when you've got something so good, no other sport really wants to take advantage of it, and it's all to our own. We don't want to see it go away. I mean, we've got something that works, that makes sense, and ultimately, is volleyball. So, props to University Athlete for always kind of taking care of us and really, providing a great service. And hopefully the NCAA will see this and understand that this is not a recruiting service.
It's like someone kicking your dog. You don't want someone kicking your dog. You love your dog.
Love it.
You like spending time with your dog. Like playing fetch.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
University Athlete.
Interesting way to go with that.
University Athlete, the dog.
Brandon, we're trying to sell Barnett on the Net Live in Vegas.
Oh, you got to be there.
You got 15 seconds. Go.
Barnett, all you have to know is Geeter, Rosenthal, Vegas. I don't know, Showgirls. What else do you need to know? It's a good time. It's where all the college coaches will be, and some of the top talent in the country. It's the way to kick off the year, and the Net Live needs to be there.
Yeah, apparently we're going to have a booth at Sapphire.
Nice.
Where that's where the show is going to be broadcasted from. Catch the Net Live at Sapphire.
Heard they've got a great buffet.
You hooked that up. I'm in. Rosenthal, thanks. See you later.
Have a great week, guys.
All right.
Later.
Along the line, nice to the NCAA. I think it bears mentioning that the approval of the D3 Men's Championship was a big deal. Geeter, you talked about it earlier with Jay. I think it's important to throw that out there. And thanks to David Rubin. We had some great emails this week. He was the guy who emailed us and said, hey, this is one thing that really was huge for D3 and for support of our sport and support on the men's side of the sport by the NCAA. So I think important to mention the big deal about that. And you heard Jay talk about the way it's going to kind of realign the EVA and the scene out there for Penn State and give perhaps some more credence to their achievements throughout the year, but certainly it's going to provide an organized way for D3 to really increase their own level.
Yeah, how great is it for these athletes to now have a sanctioned national championship to play for and a Final Four to go to? I mean, it's big time. And maybe TV.
Maybe.
Maybe a national championship game on ESPNU.
We web streamed it last year.
So that's cool.
I was
right,
play-by-play. It was a fun event.
Could be huge for these guys.
Held at Nazareth College this year. Last year we were at Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Who's your analyst?
I had Leanne. I can't remember Leanne's last name. I don't know. Somebody from Carthage College. And had another guy the next time. But it was interesting. Reed?
I had a thought on University Athlete. It reminds me of, we've talked a lot about it on the show with the AVP and how we, if the Net Live had a lot of money, let's say the Maloof's backing, and how would we cover the sport? We'd put you and Geeter up in a perch overlooking the entire thing. And we would have cameras on every court. The thing would be web streamed 8 hours, 10 hours of coverage, a lot like golf. And it'd be kind of like whenever things would get hot, like a red zone type idea, on a particular court, we'd cut to that court. You guys would comment. There would be somebody down there. And this kind of technology with the University Athlete what if you could take that technology and put it into a handheld format and you're actually at the event and you're able to track all the matches that are going on and maybe court one is just going off. There's a killer game and you got to get over there and you can follow it all on your handheld. That'd be sweet.
I'm not sure I like this idea because Reed has us in a scissor lift for 8 or 10 hours. Is there a bathroom up there?
I know, but we're also getting paid. And that's what I'm thinking. I saw dollar signs when he said 8 to 10 hours.
And Maloof.
He said Maloofs.
Yeah.
I love that idea. And you know, we did some streaming read, and that was one thing I always loved where we were set up is we had access to a couple of courts, and it was always cool to just swing the camera around. But to be able to be high on a perch and see, and just like golf, be able to see 17, 18 holes, be able to have 6, 7, 8 courts at your disposal would really be something cool. That is the one thing that, like, you know, I know I like to bring up Mike Whitmarsh, you know, the great witty who passed away in 2009. But one thing he and I, we used to love about the sport is I would always be on location announcing. He would be at home. He loved the mosaic when we did it that year because you were able to see 4 or 5 different courts and, you know, you gamble on games. And it was just fun, you know, with your buddies. I mean, you gamble $5, whatever it is. Jeremy and I always gamble on stage, too. It just made it more fun. And to be able to see all those games, the true, real volleyball fans loved that. Love that. So Reed's on to something there. And that's just not because I love Reed, which we all know.
No, I think
very
it's definitely in that kind of transitional stage where people are looking at web streaming and a lot of different possibilities and ways of getting your sport exposure and telling the story, which is really what we're talking about, telling the story of the tournament a lot better than just the championship, than just the end, because there's so much more to it. Semis, quarters, what happened in pool. There's so much going on from a story perspective to, as a fan, understand how you arrived at this point at the championship, like the NFL with their teams, with their playoffs. It's all this story mechanism around it, and then you arrive at Packers-Steelers, the ultimate old-school matchup, but you know how they got there, the Packers as the 6th seed, the Steelers just hanging on, playing defense, and you know, all that great stuff that needs to be done for our sport.
I mean, that player at Utah State who's sitting in their apartment and loves volleyball and is online watching Hermosa Beach in 70-degree weather and watching game number one, watch Rosie and Gibb going against Furby and Lucena. I mean, that's cool to me.
That's the stuff that needs to get out there.
Are you bored? Because you're yawning at me.
Just tired. Long weekend.
Went
Supercross again. Saturday night. Dodgers, first time ever.
This is now turning into a major addiction.
Dude, Dodger Stadium, first time ever at that stadium. Had a great time. Hung out, met all kinds of riders, famous people.
Did you bring your kids?
No kids. Only could get one hookup.
So it was you, me. Solo?
Just me with a few buddies.
Like solo rage, Barney.
Yeah, me with some
wife and kids
motocross guys. Yeah.
Oh, my God. What were you wearing?
Dude, I had on a flannel and jeans.
Wow. Beanie?
No way. You wore your full get-up, your boots.
I had
your goggles.
The Vala hat.
Nice.
Sport the Vala hat, you know, black and silver. Good for that because I'll tell you what, it looked like the black hole over there. It looked like a Raiders game. I was upstairs in the luxury
boxes.
High
noon at a Raiders game?
Dude, I was in the luxury boxes, of course, but I did venture down to deck number 2.
Did you take a limo?
Should have, yeah. Took the Prius to a motocross race. Not sure.
I needed to borrow a lifted truck. You were allowed in?
I go down there, and everybody just looked like they wanted to fight. It's all black. Been to races. Been to the Coliseum way back in the day. But, man, these folks, they were ready to rumble. Chicks, too. Just wanted to fight.
Yeah. Chicks that are buff.
Just, I don't know why. Well, have you been to one of these?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite the scene. The Moto Girls. A lot of buffness going on. A lot of weird hairstyles, though. 909, well represented. Sorry, Inland Empire.
Yo, yo, yo to the IE.
But I've said before, the way that they deliver that sport is something we need to bring over to the national teams and bring over to volleyball. The intros, the pyro. I don't know if we can do pyro inside. But the energy that's generated in that building to build up to the start of the race and each race that they have, that type of build-up, that needs to be captured, and that needs to be the build-up to a national team.
AVP final. That's what the players always loved about playing on center court in an AVP final. I mean, the intro and the crowd on their feet and the music, and it was all part of, you know, running on to, you know, the NBC and running on to the sand. And, you know, there is something to be said about the big build-up.
Setting
the scene. The race, they do it before, you know, every single race, and it gets everyone going.
Yeah, it's something to look forward to. And on the indoor side, I've never seen that. I mean, I've seen the AVP do it. I've seen you do it on TV and in person. But the indoor side, they simply introduce the players, and here we go. Yeah, there's some cheering and stuff. But there's no production value to what's happening. I just want to see more production value and have somebody walk away going, man, I was pumped at the beginning of that. Man, I was so excited to have it start. And I'd just like to see that happen more. And I think it'd take a few tweaks, and it can be done.
Longest show ever?
Pretty long. One last note.
Peter, who was your favorite athlete to introduce on center court?
The Lamborghini?
I'm going to tell you a few. Okay. Whitmarsh was real fun. I had it just down pat, the lovable, huggable. you know, pound for pound, best athlete on tour out of the University of San Diego, the 1996 silver medalist, you know, and that goes into the lovable, huggable Witty. I thought Karch's was always great because it would go on for 3 to 4 minutes. Barney, don't get upset, but I loved, loved introing Karch. Jeremy knows the music. It was a slow clap with the crowd. Loved that. And yes, Lambo was Lambo always had a very special intro. That's a great question. And because it involves me, I like it even more, Reed.
Now, Jeremy, did the athletes have any say into what music was played? Any athletes care about it?
A lot of them would. Misty May would come up to me a lot of times, like 5 minutes before she was introduced, and would try to get a song on because she wanted to do a new dance to it when she came out.
See, they need to have it. You need to have your song, like a relief pitcher.
Yeah.
Or like the motocross.
Jeremy did that.
A lot of players have their song.
Yeah, I'd give Geeter his intro, and then when he would introduce each player, they would each get their own song.
Yep. Jake Gibb.
Indoors, we need that.
Lose Yourself, Eminem,
Sean Rosenthal.
Reed.
Superman.
Sure. It was really cool.
This summer, World League, you're getting an intro. What's your song?
Oh, man, I'm going straight up Russian House.
This is Messiah. Sure. This is Handel's Messiah. That'd be good for Clay.
Is that Braveheart?
Just have Clay stomping
Braveheart.
Out of
Braveheart? What is that? God, that gets me going. No, that's one more.
That's Handel's Messiah, isn't it?
God, that's good.
Carmina.
Yeah, that's intense. Yeah. I just like the straight-up Russian house. Just
techno.
And I got a new DJ program, by the way, on my iPad, and I'm starting to learn some things. I can't wait to be in studio there and see if
Battle.
DJ J can help me out.
Yeah, you picked up an article off USA Today and bought that app, didn't you?
The app is unreal. I paid $20 for an app. Who does that?
Nice.
Dude, when we're going out, can you hit that music again, dude? That fired me.
I want somebody coming out to that and doing the belt and doing the Ray Lewis rev up for volleyball. I mean, come out and make
when
this
we get
a freaking
hate mail,
scene.
You play that and let the guy go off.
Totally.
That should be the whole thing. Every week there should be a hate mail about each guy, and everyone gets to have a rant because rants are very popular on the show. Everyone always tells me they love the rants by us. I mean, Barnett has had a few classic ones. Nick Lewin rant, NCAA rant. His kids rant when they were messing around with the cat and everything.
You cut it out. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's been another episode of The Net Live. Good, great.
Very good.
Oh, very good.
10 minutes. 10 minutes of great content.
We don't know which 10 minutes.
10 minutes of great content. And 40
I thought it was very
good. Wasn't funny.
Reed, right. Did you like it?
I enjoyed myself. It was a good time.
That's because he's buzzed.
Hey, we're coming in next week to that music. When we kick off the show,
Jaber Shea's starting to show some value.
I like it.
Keep emailing him, Reed.
Hey, thenetlive@gmail.com. Hit us up on Facebook. Don't be afraid to call once in a while either.
Yeah.
We got it all set up. The Net Live on thevolleyballnetwork.com. Hey, we got some important stuff coming up.
Taste my Mikasa.
Zamps signed on. New sponsor of the program.
Yep.
Great, great neoprene braces. Functional work stuff. We're going to have information from them.
Albert Hanneman, you're on next week. Barnett wants something good. He is dying for something real. Give it to us, son.
I want to hear where the 50 grand's coming from.
TK, I hope you're alive. Frogger.
Fareed from Russia. Geeter and DJ R here in the home court. I'm Kevin. We'll see you next week. The Net Live. Doing it.